This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Leaving Lepidoptera, please don't touch the displays, little boy. Oh, cute. Moving to the next aisle, we have Arachnida, the spider's our finest collection. This friendly little devil is the Heptathelidae, unfortunately harmless. Next to him, the nasty Lycosa raptoria. His tiny fangs cause creeping ulcerations of the skin. And here, my prize, the Black Widow. Isn't she lovely and so deadly? Her kiss is 15 times as poisonous as that of the rattlesnake. You see, her venom is highly neurotoxic, which is to say that it attacks the central nervous system, causing intense pain, profuse sweating, difficulty in breathing, loss of consciousness, violent convulsions, and finally, death. You know, I think what I love the most about her is her inborn need to dominate, possess. In fact, immediately after the consummation of her marriage to the smaller and weaker male of the species, she kills and eats him. She is delicious. And I hope he was. Such power and dignity, unhampered by sentiment. If I may put forward a slice of personal philosophy, I feel that man has ruled this world as a stumbling, demented child king long enough. And as his empire crumbles, my precious Black Widow shall rise as his most fitting successor.
It is 19 minutes after the hour of one, and this the month of October in the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for joining us live in the plushly appointed yet not very ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network from high above the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy as we plummet headlong toward Halloween. Here's the very best thing about that Vincent Price speech right there, which is from the Welcome to My Nightmare album put out by Alice Cooper. Is that they fully intended to have him recreate that on The Muppet Show at one point. And the Muppet Show guys were fine with it. They're like, have at it, whatever. Because, like, Alice Cooper was already going to be on there singing a song about humping, you know, a corpse. So I think they were fine. But that was one of those rare moments where it was like CBS or whoever it was finally stepped in and went, no. We've had about enough of The Muppet Show's rather interesting take on programming for children. You won't be doing that. So there you go. That is Vincent Price from the song Devil's Food. Right there on the Welcome to My Nightmare record. Hello, Dawn Taylor. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am fantabulous. That's how I am.
You look good.
I'm not really that fantabulous. Do I look good, though? Because that's what counts.
Good. You look good.
Here's the thing.
Yesterday you had crazy hair. But you look good today.
What do you mean I had crazy hair?
I mean you had crazy hair.
Well, it was nice of you to tell me yesterday when I could have done something about it instead of letting me walk around all day like a dunce. Thanks.
No, it was just in here. I assumed that when you left the building, you probably smoothed it back down.
No, that's not what you're thinking. You're thinking that as soon as I leave the building, I just apparate back home, and then I throw a bolt. And, you know, and the only time I open the door, like, even if the pizza guy shows up, it's just like a little eye shutter, like, but password. And the guy goes, double cheese, double pepperoni. And I go, yeah, put it under the door, see?
Okay, you're right. Yes, that's exactly what I think.
No, that was pretty much it. That was very nearly the extent of my day. In the future, you can feel free to point out if I'm having, like, a bad hair day or a bad face day or just a...
Well, there's this unfortunate thing that happens, you know, with us putting on and taking off the headphones repeatedly. As, you know, it happens to me as well. And you have pointed it out occasionally.
You just get, like, the weird... It's weird. It's like the hair flattens down and seals to your scalp, like, right in the middle of your head.
But then it kind of fluffs up in the front where you've, like... pulled the headphones across it.
And, yeah, and you get like a weird sort of awkward split-endy pompadour thing happening in the front the front of your face. No, some days I will have, you know, the great hair day, and the hair always looks really, really good when I leave the house. And I always just take a moment to savor it, just to appreciate it in a mirror, because I know it's not going to last. Well, in any event, well, I'm glad that I seem like I'm doing right. Here's the thing that I just realized. So just now, as we were transitioning from Legion of News, you know, because we got all your rituals and things we do, and I get my headphones out, and I get the sound ready for the next show, and I switch over the recording, and I reset the computer, and I do all this stuff. But then one of those things where I get my crisp, refreshing Visa ready. And today was one of those horrifying experiences where if there could have been an orchestral stab accompanying it, there would have been, because I realized when I opened the fridge, it was that dun-dun-dun-dun, and there was just nothing there. And I have the clearest memory yesterday, which would have been, I guess, Wednesday, of just saying to myself, well, I guess I'll just take this last one home with me. I won't leave it here at the studio where I might need it tomorrow. I'll take it home because I'll need it at my place of residence. I'll buy more tonight and bring it with me. So I did, in fact, I didn't buy like a whole case because I'm waiting for it to go on sale, where they sell like the big 24 yes. thing or whatever for like $12. But what I'll do is just buy a few just to kind of get me along, you know, just to tide me over until the next time that I can just buy a whole rack of it or whatever. So this morning, I should just give the preview for everything else coming up in the show anyway, because once I start talking about morning, it's just the whole thing's going to go off the rails. It is Thursday, so thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964 if you'd like to be part of today's program. 503-505-6964 if you'd like to weigh in with your comments, questions, queries, thoughts, ruminations, ponderings, musings, recipes from the old country, whatever it is you might have to share. It's 503-505-6964. You can also Skype if you would like. You can do that directly. That is Rick Emerson Show. That is the Skype username, Rick Emerson Show. And the text box is open at the Rick Emerson website. You can also email if you like, if that's your pleasure. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. And Dawn can be reached at Dawn, D-A-W-N, at rickemerson.com. So that's how you can do that. We got a job watch coming up today. Corpse watch coming up today. Anna Griffin from the Oregonian will be sitting in the studio with us later on today, talking about all the things happening in our glorious community, up to and including but not limited to the elections, which are... Ooh. It can't be tomorrow because tomorrow's Friday. It's next Tuesday.
Yeah.
So next Tuesday is the voting day for everybody else, and it's the day by which all of our ballots are going to be turned in or
right.
whatever. Because that whole thing where it's like, I always forget about it. And then I'm trying to find a place on Tuesday that you can do the drop-off, that where there isn't a line that's just, like, endless. Because I think, as we determined yesterday, there is no actual voting in person, like, you know, at the location here now. And that's happening in more and more states are eliminating the lever system altogether. It's just like a mail-in sort of a thing they do. All right. So Anna Griffin will talk about that. We got the top five coming up as well. Top five songs about Satan. And that's not – here's the thing about this. First of all, A – I had some rules going into this. You can only do like one song from each artist. You can't just do a whole, because it's going to be nothing but, you know, it's going to be nothing but like Iron Maiden or whatever. You know, it's just nothing but Ozzy Osbourne
and
songs.
No one wants that.
No. Well, several people want that, but they're not going to get it. They'll get that maybe later, if I find out that they're dying of something rare and non-communicable. So that'll be, by the way, if somebody in the audience is ever stricken with you, like you got a fatal disease or something and the doctor says you got 6 months to live, we'll do a top five. And that counts as our special vision. You can't, no double dipping. You don't get to do anything else. So we'll do the top five songs about Satan coming up later on the day. The ground rules were one song from each artist. And here's the other thing. It's got to be the actual literal figurative, real devil, not a figurative devil. It's got to be the actual real Satan.
So none of this Rolling Stones, please introduce myself nonsense.
Well, no, it can be about a person who is an actual demon or a villain or a devil. It just can't be about, here's the lovely thing. It can be about a monkey, even if the monkey is doing something fanciful or fantastical, like being perhaps a waiter in a Jonathan Coulton song, but it can't be like a monkey in my back, because that's just a figure of speech.
Yeah, but you said about Satan. So therefore, now if you say it literally has to be about Satan, these songs have to be about Satan.
Well, it's Satan as he is understood by whatever religion. It's Satan as an actual person.
Yeah.
As opposed to a person. Not a metaphor for anything else.
Okay.
You're getting way ahead of yourself. Because it's only like 1:30. So you just save your applause and questions to the end.
All right.
And we'll be fine. So that's coming up later on today. Top five songs about Satan. Anna Griffin from the Oregonian. Job Watch, Corpse Watch, all of that on the way and so forth. Plus, Don Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Thursday.
A woman breaks her neck and has to pick up her own head. Dollar Tree Halloween lanterns pose a fire risk. And police find a missing 10-year-old's prosthetic leg.
So that is all on the way, brought to you by a series of fine folks, including Mr. Michael Beatty, proprietor of The Cleaning Solution. He can be reached at 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211. See, now I got to ask you, I said we were going to wait until the end of the show to do this, but now I got to know, what is your distinction between, capitalized, the devil and Satan?
Well, I'm just going by what you said. I mean, I don't have the actual transcript of what you said a few seconds ago.
But okay, there's no need to be snarky.
I'm not.
What is okay? So let me ask you this. Let me bottom line it. What is the difference between the devil as opposed to a devil, the devil and Satan, from your vantage point?
Well, I believe the devil and Satan can qualify as the same person.
Okay,
but you know, there are other demons and demonic entities that are not Satan.
Okay, so you want to make sure that this wasn't a song about, like, Hector the devil or something.
Well, something, because you first made this clear that it couldn't be a metaphor, but then you said, so this had to be somebody who is a demon or who thinks they're a demon. And I'm like, you said Satan.
Well, yeah, but Satan isn't depicted the same. I'm just saying, however he is actually painted in terms of details, it can't be a metaphor. It's right. Got to be the actual devil, although,
right.
But everybody's depiction of the devil is not the same.
Yeah.
Just like everybody's depiction of God is not the same. So it's like talking about God as an actual person, as an actual deity, as opposed to using God as some sort of an analogy for something. Even though various depictions of God are not the same, so you could do a song about like God, and you could have like Vishnu, and you could also have Allah. Same thing. Same God, but that's not the same as saying, like, Eric Clapton is God of the guitar. That
no,
doesn't really count.
That would, but in my book, that would be, that those would be top five songs about a God.
Well, when you do your own list, then that can be the way you operate it, Don.
You actually used the name Satan.
Right.
Well that's but a again, very specific devil.
But is it?
It's a specific God.
So, but Satan. All religions do not render Satan the same. Certain religions, for example, preach that Satan and Lucifer are one and the same. Certain religions do not. Some religions teach that Satan was, in fact, the brother of Jesus. Some do not. You don't know what you're talking about. Leave the demonology to me, sister. That's this side of the room is where all the Satanology is. Right over here.
Okay.
I've corralled all. I've cornered the market like the Duke's cornered the market on orange juice. You can just like that or lump it. You can take it down the road, and then you can dump it.
And I'm willing to keep an open mind for this until we actually get to the top 10 and I see what these so-called Satan songs are about.
If it makes you feel any better, your objections are going to matter just as little to me then as like now. So if you want to you can just file those away right now if you'd like. I've got a drawer over here for things like that. It's a round drawer that I keep on the ground by my feet.
Is it your butt?
That's a kind of a round drawer, in which I only very occasionally take deliveries. Zam! All right, here's the thing. See, now people, now, goddamn mother effers, I hate you. I hope you die poor and alone, covered in fire ants. Because you've done now just a bunch of goddamn text messages. It's like first-year seminary students trying to get up in my business about the devil. I just said Satan because it sounds better linguistically than the devil. Fine, are you happy? Can I go?
So you're admitting,
can I be released?
You're admitting then that you were not being completely precise in what your top five
There's
was
no
about.
Internal structure to my top five. It's all a lie. It's a ruse. I don't deserve to live. I was weighing. Okay, because the alternative now we're just so completely far afield. Somebody, I just read an email from somebody this morning actually said, I appreciate the way that you try to keep the show on track despite your own internal form of operating. So this is not one of those moments, by the way. No, this is exactly how my brain works. So this morning, I was sitting there and I was creating the top five list, and I already had this sort of distinction in my head about that it was going to be about, the devil or Satan or whatever, in a grand sort of magnificent demon kind of a way. Just that it was going to be figurative, exclusionary. So
right.
It was going to be literal, not figurative. And then I literally sat there. And I like to think that maybe David Mamet does the same thing, which is the only reason it's not retarded. I literally sat there for like 20 or 25 seconds this morning saying out loud to myself, top five songs about Satan, top five songs about the devil, top five songs about the devil and Satan, top five Satan songs, devil songs, top five Satan songs also about the devil. And just trying to come up with every possible, just like everybody's, just like the worst possible caricature of a Broadway actor, just sitting there looking to a mirror, seeing how far they can adjust one eyelid so they can convey an emotion. It's just sitting there worrying about all the linguistics. And then you know what I finally thought to myself at the end? I thought, Well, Satan sounds better than the devil. It's just got the hard T in it, and it's got the S at the beginning, and it's, you know, and it's a proper name in certain faiths, and so that's going to have more linguistic punch. I'll just say top five songs about Satan, because who could possibly care? What difference could it effing make what I say? And it's like 5 seconds out of the gate, and you're all up in a brother's grill about it.
Words mean something, mister.
I'm going to swear to God, I'm going to cut you, and I'm going to mock your pleas for mercy while you die. But not right now, because we've got the show to do. It's 503-505-6964. See, you know, somebody, can it be devil with a blue dress on? Shut your hole. Shut your goddamn virtual mouth, sons of bitches. All right, well, in any event. And then there's the whole business about how my ass is apparently a thing in which I take deliveries, because it is a cylindrical drawer, I suppose. It's God's own drawer, in which he just stores his own kind of junk. It's not really a drawer so much as it is like that. It's like that outgoing thing for the UPS guy. You know, you keep on your desk. Some days it's UPS, yes. Some days it's no.
It's like that pneumatic tube you use at the drive-thru for the bank.
Yes, that's exactly what it really is, actually, when you think about it. It doesn't make that noise, though. Would that it did. We have to stop and get a hold of ourselves right now, because otherwise I could tell you Anna Griffin's going to come in here, and she's a real reporter. That's the thing. She's a journalist, and we're just going to be talking about butts and Satan. And then she's going to be like, it's been great being on your show. It's never happening again. All right, well, in any event, and Anna Griffin just became the Pepperidge Farm guy right there in that
depression.
It's 503-505-6964. So here's the way my whole morning started. So I had to get up early today because, you know, this is preparing the amusements for the people, as I always do. And then it's like I had to take the dogs to the groomer. I had to drop the dogs off to get their haircut or whatever. And as I'm... You know, and I hadn't had my caffeine yet because I'd gotten up and I was just sort of stumbling around and letting the dogs go out and, you know, do their business in the front while I, you know, just I find my pants and whatever and I'm getting dressed and stuff. And I'm doing all that and then the phone rings and I look down and it's, you know, it's my wife and she's calling from I guess Barcelona or whatever is where she is today. And it's like I've missed her the last 2 or 3 times she's called because... And it, you know, it really is just my excuse. I mean, because it's, you know, her, she's got jet lag and she's traveling. She's like drunk half the time, I think. And so she kind of vaguely knows when she's calling, but not really. You know, but for me, it's like, you know, I'm here and I've got the benefit of technology and I've got my iPhone that has like Madrid time programmed into it or whatever. So it's like I feel really bad whenever I miss her call because and then she really lays on the guilt. She doesn't mean to, but she does that thing of calling and then leaving a message saying, okay, well, it's me. Well, I just waited in the rain in Barcelona for like an hour to get to this phone, and I've got this handful of shiny pesos that I'm going to be using to call you back. I hope you answer. You know, meanwhile, I'm just asleep or whatever, you know, or just, you know, I'm just like playing Left 4 Dead in the living room. I don't hear the phone ring. And then she'll call back and she'll leave the second message. She's like, well, I guess you're not around. Okay. It's just so lonely here in Europe. I'll call later. And then I just feel terrible. So now I've done the thing where I keep the phone with me all the time and with the ringer turned up to like maximum volume so that I never miss the... But which also means... And plus it's on vibrate. And so it just does it, you know, it does everything but tase me when the phone rings. But which of course now means that every time the phone rings, it just scares the hell out of me because it's just as loud as can be. And plus it's a thing in my pants going and just vibrating. So I will actually go to sleep with the phone, not actually under my pillow, but sort of next to me on the bed, you know, and so that's just disconcerting. So I get up and I'm taking the dogs outside and I haven't had my coffee and the phone rings and it scares the hell out of me. And then I answer and then it's Laura and I'm trying to have this conversation with her while I'm also trying to get the dogs ready to take them to the groomer and I'm doing all of this stuff and I'm getting dressed and I got the phone next to my, next to my head and then I accidentally hang up on her, once and then she has to call back, which apparently... I guess it's like you got to get a team of ponies to walk inside like a barrel or something and generate the electricity in Spain to like, you know, to kick off the spark plugs, which turn on the phone or something. So she finally gets a hold of me and I'm, you know, and I'm taking the dogs outside and Max can't wait to get in the car because he loves to travel and Philo hates the car. So he's trying to run back inside and he's wrapping himself around my legs. And meanwhile, it's raining and Philo's pulling me into the mud and I'm slipping and one of my other shoes lands in some dog business that I hadn't noticed and was, fool enough to leave sitting there. So then I got to scrape my shoe off before I can hop back into the house on one shoe with both the dogs going berserk and Lara on the phone from Barcelona going, and then we're going to go see a pile of dirt that's 7 million years old. Isn't that going to be exciting? I'm going, that's really, really great. And then I get the call waiting from the dog grooming place letting me know that I'm about to be late. And if I'm more than 15 minutes late, they can't guarantee that they'll hold a spot for the dogs. And they might put him later in the afternoon, which doesn't work because I'm here. So I can be yelled at about the difference between God and the devil by like you and everybody else who has access to a dial-up internet connection like anywhere on the goddamn planet. So I'm doing all this morning And as I get into the car, what I do not realize, but what I discovered about 10 minutes ago when I went downstairs to get my Viso, is that I, yes, left a brand new sealed can of Viso on the roof of my car.
Oh.
Drove off with it. It's back on my street somewhere. It's just sitting on the ground. Can't be consumed by anybody. It certainly can't be consumed by me. So.
Oh, I'm sure some cart pushing, you know, hobo has probably enjoyed your Viso by now.
I didn't realize that, by the way, or I would have picked one up on the way here. I realized that, you know, because I got here, had time to go to Kettleman, had time to go to AMPM, had time to go back home, really, if I'd thought about it. But no, I just discovered that now as we were getting ready to do the switchover.
When you did that thing, like, it actually was a lot like, there's this one cartoon where Bugs Bunny is running up and down the steps into a basement.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like that. You went out the door and said, I'll be right back. And I heard the light switch go, click. And it, dum, 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 dum.
Yeah.
And then a minute later, click, ding, 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 you came back up.
Yeah. And see yesterday's conversation about how you know when you're a junkie. I'm doing that thing in my car of like finding like the empty Viso bottles and picking them up, hoping that there's like some left in the, you know. I'm like basically just one of those Depression era hobos smoking the butts that he finds in the gutter. Anyway.
Would you like half of mine?
See, I feel bad
no.
because you've got the. I don't want to be drinking. Because I don't want to drink part of your Viso. That just seems like...
No, I'll share it with you. I'll give you half. I'll pour it into a cup for you or something.
I actually... I may or may not take you up on that. I actually brewed a pot of coffee just now. But then, here's just how pathetic I am. Because I want to try to simulate the experience of having the Viso. You want to talk about a guy who really just looks like he's like a smack addict. So as I'm brewing the coffee, and I've only ever used this coffee pot once before, and I made a terrible mess of it then. It's the thing when you're using a coffee pot you have never used before, and you realize you have no idea exactly how many teaspoons or tablespoons of, like, why can't they just make the instructions where they just like when they say,
why,
like,
isn't it universal?
Yeah, where they go, like, it's going to be 1/4, you know, rounded cup of coffee to 5 ounces of water. No one knows what that is. Why can't they just say, like, this line here is like this many teaspoons of coffee? Because that's what everybody does, you know. Or they'll say, even worse is the coffee makers are more likely the actual, like, if it's a can of coffee, sometimes they'll say 1 rounded scoop. And it's like, well, what the hell scoop? It's like the scoop that came in the Folgers or whatever. It is like nobody has this. The scoop isn't. We've lost the scoop. No one keeps the scoop. So just now, I'm just, you know, and it's a coffee pot where it's got like some weird. It's got like the water reservoir thing is at the bottom, and you basically, you know, it's like playing Myst, where you gotta turn a picture over and like solve a riddle before you can get the thing out. And then I'm just ladling in dry coffee with a plastic tablespoon, having no idea, by the way, when I've put in enough or too much or whatever. And then I press start and it doesn't do anything, and that's when I realize it's like all the microwaves are now, to where there isn't just like a dial and an on button. Do you ever go to a microwave and it says like timer, and you press it, and then it just says something like WT period. And you go like, well, I don't, how do I, and then you can't get out of it. There's no like back button like in a browser, you know? And it's like you end up unplugging the microwave and plugging it back in because you can't figure out how to get to the part where I just goddamn cook things.
Well, this coffee pot in particular was especially puzzling to me when I first did it, because it's one of these ones where the coffee all brews and then it stays inside the pot.
Right.
And then you can just like,
cup at a time.
It has a little dispenser that you can like, you know, dispense your coffee directly into your cup. But that means that you have to take the whole thing apart and take the basket out. And then you take out this bucket, basically, and put water in it. And then you have to like pour it really carefully because... it's got this really skinny, narrow little opening to the reservoir. So you have to, like, use the little spout on this giant, awkward bucket.
You're right. And the opening is, like, 3/4 of an inch, maybe.
Yeah.
And it's, like, a rectangular opening. It's, like, a long, skinny, narrow opening. I don't know why. Look, I'm not complaining. I just don't know why they would design...
And then you have to put the bucket back in because that's what the coffee's going to brew back into after it brews. And then you have to figure out how to fit the basket that has the filter back, then that's the puzzle piece that doesn't quite fit. It's a mess. It's a nightmare.
Coffee ought to just be a utility at this point. I mean, there ought to be like, you know, like we used to have on sinks in the 70s where there was like the faucet and then there was that black little like spray, that thing that you just used to spray the dishes. And it's like, you wouldn't have to use it if you didn't want to. You know, but it was there. Like, the city provided it. So, like, in a worst-case scenario, there's hot water, cold water, coffee. And you just pull the... or just caffeinated water. Like, that could be a third tap. When Rick Emerson is president, the third tap is going to be caffeinated. And then you can add a flavoring to it. So when you wake up and you're like, I can't... I thought you were going to buy coffee. And then she says, I thought you were going to buy coffee. And then you just, you know, kind of like, come on! Where there's nothing. So, That was my point. Oh, so I'm a total junkie because I don't have the Viso because, again, putting on the roof of the car this morning. So as I'm fumbling my way through the coffee-making process, and can I tell you, just for one brief moment, I thought, well, I could delay the start of the show. I could just put on some crap from yesterday and walk to this. But then I didn't because I realized that's how you know that still the people are the most important thing. So I'm making coffee, and then I just took every remaining sugar packet in the cupboard. Just right here in my hand so that I can, you know, so that it can have the sweet thing so that my body will, you know, for just to kind of think. Sort of like floating checks where my body will go, well, it's kind of like Viso, I guess. Like I can just make, like if I just drink it real fast. You know, if like maybe my circulatory and the thyroidal system will not know that it isn't Viso.
I'm telling you though, I would be happy to share this Viso with you because I did have 3 cups of coffee and 2 cups of tea this morning before I got to the Viso. So
I might take you up on that.
I'm well caffeinated today.
All right, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Program Job Watch coming up today. Corpse Watch, Anna Griffin from the Oregonian. Top 5 songs about some vaguely defined demon-like entity who may or may not bear a resemblance to any Christian form of Satan or Lucifer. Then again, might be a totally different thing. You can all just pile on, tell Rick what a big failure he is. Sorry.
We can call it Satan if it makes you happy.
Shut up. Don't mock my pain with your faux sympathy. Whore. All right. It's 503-505-6964. So that's it. Oh, and then just the final, but the insult to injury then, which I guess is not really true because it happened early this morning. It's the thing where I drop the dogs off, though. I drop the dogs off at the groomer. Where, like, they've all been, like, Max has been there hundreds of times, probably. Philo's been there dozens of times. But it's that thing where as, and I should know better than to do this, where as I drop them off and then I walk, I do the thing of I turn and I look back. And the dogs are just staring at me.
Oh.
The dogs are just giving me the, how have we displeased you? You know, the, like even Max, you know, who's like the tough guy. Even they're looking at me like, hello, you've forgotten us. You know, and it's like you feel, I would imagine, like you're dropping your kid off at kindergarten. And the kid is like, you just see the kid's face pressed against the glass. Like, no, it's come back. You know, and I just felt so terrible.
My dog has been doing that with me because, like, you know, for a couple of years, I was a freelance writer and I was working at home almost all the time. And now for the last several months, I've been doing this and I've been leaving the house every day. And so she knows she's going to be alone for like several hours. And she's started just basically trying to convince me that she can come with me.
Just jumping into your lap as
you're... Well, yeah, I go to the door, and she goes to the door.
Yeah.
And then she's just looking at me like, hey.
Let's leave.
Let's go. One day, she actually just muscled past me and ran out the front door.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to the car now. And I was like, no, we're not. And then Bella, get back in the house. I put her in, and then she gives me the look of like, really? But why?
I thought we were pals.
Yeah.
No. It's that's another reason why I know that I shouldn't have kids. Because it's like, I just, you know, because I go so, like you probably do, I go so mental about the dogs. You know, when anything bad happens or I feel like I've been, you know, that time, you know, like occasionally I'll do something where I feel like I've been a bad dog parent.
Yeah.
Like there was one time, once, and thankfully it was, I think I noticed it right away. But there's that one time where it's like I hear this sort of plasticky sound in the kitchen and I walk in. And it's like I had, for whatever reason, it's like the water had run out. Like we had the little water cooler thing, the bistro, where it like fills the dish.
Mm.
And I know that it was like no more than like an hour or something because I'd actually checked it that morning when I'd fed them. But later on, Max was like, I guess I need some more liquid. And then there was nothing there. And so he was just like pushing the empty water thing around with his snout. And I just felt so terrible. It was like I wanted to go to confession and just do 100 Hail Marys. It's like the one time I tried to trim my hedgehog's toenails myself, which is a thing you got to do every now and again. And they tell you, like, well, you can just use it. You know, you can use nail clippers for that. And I did it for a couple of months. And then this one time I was trimming Ramon's toenails. And it's like I trimmed too closely. And it's like there was like it bled a little bit. And I was traumatized for like the rest of the week. I was like, I don't care what the vet charges. We have to go there because I can't. So God forbid if I just did something and maimed one of my kids or whatever. I mean, there's no coming back from that. I mean, the dog thing messes me up, you know, enough, like as it is. So there you go. So that was my entire morning. Yours was probably way, your morning, your night was probably way more interesting because mine was basically just consumed with dogs and with, you know, a can full of chemicals that I apparently can't live without.
My evening was boring as usual, although I did have one of those mornings where, and I mentioned this briefly, you were like, save it for the show. I had this glimpse where I had a little bit of an epiphany where I kind of understood for the first time on a fundamental level the whole thing with guys and like strippers. or guys and like the hot barista and that sort of, you know, that whole thing.
Was
that
where, just now when I was talking about dogs or?
No, this was this morning when I went and got coffee. Because I've never understood this whole thing of men deluding themselves into thinking they have some kind of relationship.
She likes me.
Yeah. When you know it's a financial arrangement. Yeah. And I went to Dutch Brothers, and I don't know if you ever have been driven through the Dutch Brothers.
I have not.
Well, they actually operate on basically the Hooters school of customer service. They hire really attractive people, mostly female.
Right.
And they play like really loud music, and everybody's bouncing around and dancing. And they call you sweetie and hun.
Do they do that to you?
Yes.
Really?
And they're really super friendly. And they ask you personal questions. How are you doing today? Where are you headed?
I would imagine.
Here's your coffee, sweetheart.
They're not just friendly. They're bubbly.
Yeah.
Perky.
And they're all like that all the time, no matter what time of day you get there. And honestly, first thing in the morning, if you're undercaffeinated, it's really freaking annoying. But they're even like that to me. So I went there this morning and... It was one of the rare occasions where there was a guy working there as well. They generally work during the busy periods in the morning. They work in teams of three, so because the one I go to has two drive-up windows,
right.
And so they have somebody like actually pulling the shots and making the drinks, and then somebody working each window, and they're running back and forth and picking up the
is this like one of those huts, or is it an actual building?
No, it's an actual kiosk. It's a good-sized hut kiosk thing.
Okay.
And the guy I dealt with was so insanely ridiculously handsome. He looked like he ought to be on like Gossip Girl or something. He was one of these just ridiculously insanely conventionally good-looking young men, probably maybe 19 or something like that.
Yes.
And he was like, "Hey, how are you this morning?"
Hey, young lady.
And I'm like, "Fine." He's like, "Yeah." And he's chatting me up.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, "Where you got?" And I said, "I'm going to work." "Oh, you're going to your job." And he's dumb as a stump. But he's got this just million-watt smile, and he's just really charming, making a lot of eye contact, which is one thing that the Dutch Brothers people all do. And I had that moment where I was like, he's flirting with me.
Yes.
And there's also this part of me that goes, he flirts with everyone.
Yes.
He works here.
Yes.
That's what they do.
Yes.
And yet, at the same time, I was like, oh, he's flirting with me.
See, that's the thing. It's like, even when you know the game works sometimes. Even when you realize that you are being manipulated, if it's skillful enough, it happens anyway, and you kind of are like, I guess I'm okay with it. It feels pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I just went, I bet this is the thing that guys have with, like, strippers.
I think so, although I think guys have it. I think that is more effective in a weird way coming from, like, the girl who sells you coffee, because I've had that, than from strippers, because I think with strippers, it's like, it's so on the surface. It's so, in other words, you expect that when you go to a strip club. You're like, that's an exchange of things. She shows me her rack, I give her a dollar. Whatever, you know, she leads me on and teases me. I delude myself into thinking I'm going to get some. I go home broke, you know, and all of my money transfers itself to her, and then I leave. And you know, guys on some level know the deal, but I think the transfer of that kind of behavior, that kind of overt marketing, it's not like women are new to flirting or men for that matter. I mean, that's just like an evolutionary thing. But I think the overt use of that as a business practice, especially at and coffee places. When is it about? They don't do that like at the hardware store or something. You go to like return something to return something to the video store, and it's like they got some chick behind the counter in like a low cut shirt going, "Hey big boy, what are you renting tonight?" It's like it's only coffee places.
Yeah.
What is that about?
I don't know.
But I think that's a relatively recent phenomenon, and so I think it is easier to delude yourself into thinking, no, dude, I think she's really into me.
Yeah.
She told me to come see her anytime. You know, and it's because you do, because
she said, see you tomorrow.
Right.
So obviously she's looking forward to seeing me again.
Because it's not a sexual business. It's not an adult-oriented business. And so you think, well, dude, I mean, it's not like she's a stripper or something. I mean, yeah, sure, strippers and hookers got to flirt with you because it's a sex business. This is, she's just selling me coffee. You know, and I think that is, you are seeing in action the evolution of not only human sexual and psychosexual response, but also just the evolution of that as it has to do with business practices.
Yeah.
Because you got to wonder how long it's going to be before they start doing that like everywhere. Here's a fun fact. I had a friend of mine, and then we got to get some news. We'll take a break. We got Anna Griffin from the Oregonian who's going to be here. Job Watch, Corpse Watch, top five songs about Satan, you know, which we may retroactively retitle. And a friend of mine, she worked in Seattle at the Nintendo Corporation, which is, weirdly enough, literally next door to Microsoft. It's like one of those things where they shouldn't let the president and the vice president be on the same plane, because, like, if it hits a mountain, everybody's effed.
Yeah.
It's amazing that they let Microsoft and Nintendo, I mean, they're like, it's like from here to Ryerson, you know, or whatever. It's like right there. It's just astounding. She worked at the support center where the phone, like when you'd call up because you were stumped on some level of Zelda or whatever. You're playing like Kid Icarus, you know, and you can't quite figure out how to get your waxed wings on or something. And so you would call, like, the Nintendo helpline, and it's like they wouldn't give you the answers, but there's that whole thing where they would walk you through, you know. And it's a pretty, there's a whole documentary in that, by the way, about people who work video game, and it's not like tech support. I mean, it's like tip lines, basically.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm plugging in and it's not working. It's where you call and you go, like, I can't get past grumble, grumble. And the woman says, well, what else makes a grumbling sound? And you go, I don't know, volcanoes? Let's see, my father late in the evenings, when he's balancing checkbook, I don't know what, and, well, you know, I got nothing. And
well, when did you eat last?
There you go. See, you could work there. And then you say, food, and she goes, and when something's grumbling, what do you do to, you know, your stomach? What do you do to you? I feed it, and then you feed grumble, grumble, and then you can get past. And there's like a whole Bible, for, you know, for how to help people out with that. But when she worked at the Nintendo tip line, she said she walked inside and she wasn't really surprised, but she said she, I don't know, maybe it had never occurred to her that it was like 85% women who worked there, women of a certain age or women who sounded of a certain age, which is like below 25, because the callers are all like between 13 and 19, and they're all dudes.
That is interesting.
For you know, all intents and purposes, it's guys calling. Yeah. Because it's not just that guys play video games. Guys apparently were the ones who were the most, strangely enough, were the most likely to call the tip line. I think because women are better at problem solving and puzzle solving in most cases, especially with video games. And so the guys, though, would be like, F this, I'm calling. And they would just call up, and it was like disproportionately staffed by these young, hot-sounding girls. And I mean, that's... So Nintendo clearly knows something that Dutch Brothers knows. So there you go. All right. We're the smartest people on Earth, Don.
I think so.
It's really what we are. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Anna Griffin from the Oregonian coming up. Job Watch coming up. Corpse Watch coming up. We'll talk about the Geek-O-Lantern contest, which apparently is getting a fair amount of interest on the Intertron. I guess there's a lot of links to that have sprung up all over the place. So, bully for us. We'll talk to Anna about that, too, because I got no idea how we're going to... We got to pick a winner by, I guess, tomorrow, because we're announcing the winners tomorrow, and it's just... It's a fool's errand. Got nothing. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Program, made possible by The Cleaning Solution, Mr. Michael Beatty. Let's say your carpet is stained orange because you stayed up till all hours of the night carving a Star Trek jack-o'-lantern, which, while awesome looking, has a significance and meaning that are kind of lost on Donna and myself because... I don't know. For me, because my nerddom sort of goes in a different direction. I'm a little maybe somewhere between a casual fan and a massive freak. I don't have a Star Trek fetish or something. I'm not one of those guys who can just list off episodes. You're probably in the same boat. You know more about Star Trek than, like, my mom. But you're not one of those... But you're not a Thomas Gill. You're not a guy who could just sit there and go, like, episode 82 is, you know, whatever.
Yeah, my Star Trek knowledge is actually pretty pathetic.
Yeah, so our Trek foo is, I mean, it's not weak, but it's not like, you know, it's like a 4 out of 10, maybe. So we got to figure out all of those things later on. But if you've been carving a Geek-O-Lantern and you find that your carpet needs cleaning or your upholstery, your tile, anything in your house, any walkway, anything your feet might touch, and Sully... You can find out how to get that cleaned at 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. The Cleaning Solution. Mr. Michael Beatty, a longtime and actually the first sponsor of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk at the Emerson News Network is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
A horrific fall from a horse left a British woman with such a severely broken neck, she was forced to pick up her own head.
It's interesting that there's such a thing as a severely broken neck. I would think that would be a binary state of affairs.
Well, actually, you can break your neck in a fairly minor capacity, just like your back. You can actually
really
break your back, like injure your spine and... differing degrees of
I didn't
of
know
badness.
That. Yeah. Well, I guess if you can have a hairline fracture in your ankle, but you can also, like, shatter your ankle.
Exactly.
All right, okay.
Thea Maxfeld, who runs a stud farm in Oxfordshire, England, suffered what they call a hangman's break. A clean break of the upper cervical vertebra when she fell from her dressage horse.
Do not want.
She tried to get out of the animal's way as it galloped around after the fall, but when she tried to pick herself up, she found that her head stayed where it was. She realized she had to move to avoid being stomped on, so she cupped her hands around her own head and lifted it into place to avoid damaging her spinal cord.
Oh, my God.
As soon as I came off the horse, I knew something was wrong, she told the Daily Express newspaper. I went to get up, but my head stayed on the floor. I couldn't move my neck or my head, and I had to literally pick my head up and carry it in my hands.
Jesus.
After managing to stagger to safety, Maxfeld, watched by her frightened mother, Diane, was taken to the hospital. Doctors initially warned that she might be permanently paralyzed, but incredibly, after using a revolutionary fixed brace connected to a computer by tiny sensors for 3 months to help fuse the bones back together, she's now back riding 7 months after the accident.
Okay, well, first of all, somebody hasn't done a little lesson learning. I would say you said it was like off a horse?
Yeah.
So she got reaved? And I mean, really, I mean, that guy right there, that's, I mean, lesson enough. I mean, you can maybe ride a horse, just don't have him jump anything or, you know.
Yeah. I mean, granted, she owns a horse farm, so she's probably unlikely to give up the whole horse business after that, but
maybe
yeah.
She can hire people, though. I mean,
she had to pick up her own head and carry it.
God damn. And I mean, imagine that's just a thing where it's like, you know, it's just going to be like nothing but banana peels and oil slicks on the way to the hospital. That'll be the day that all the kids left their roller skates laying on the stairs, you know, and a guy, you know, this guy's doing a whole lot of, hey, come look at this. You know, let people pulling, tugging at your sleeve for things. Jesus.
She's another one of those people, though. You wouldn't want to be her kid.
No.
Because you would never be able to complain about anything ever.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me just tell you something about neck breaking. And this,
you don't want to clean your room? I had to carry my own head.
Well, that's like, you know, we've talked about our parents always, you know, their parents seem to grow up in some hard scrabble time where you're having to, like, scotch tape your rib cage together or something after breaking it or whatever. But, I mean, I wonder, see, oh, it's just a horrible story. I wish we'd never read that. And I don't say that about a lot of stories. I wish that story had never left your lips. Because are you doing what I'm doing, which is that you're sort of imagining what it feels like?
Oh, yeah. I'm very aware of my own neck at the moment.
It's like but it's sort of a soft, pliable, and yet sort of like crunchy kind of a feeling.
Yeah.
As though you had, it's like as though you had, like maybe, silly putty with nails inside of it that you were kind of squishing around.
Well, have you ever done that thing where you're just trying to loosen yourself up and you, like, you know, rotate your head around, you're trying to loosen up,
crunk.
And you hear something go,
oh, yeah.
Go crunch or something like that,
yeah.
And you suddenly have that moment of like, what if I had just like paralyzed myself just by rolling my head around?
The very first time I went to a chiropractor, that was, you know, there's that thing with the chiropractor where they adjust your neck. And that was a thing that it actually took me, I guess it took me 2 or 3 visits before I worked up to it because I was, you know, I mean, I'd seen other people get it done, and they said, oh, no, it feels fantastic. And I was like, I don't know. And, of course, I do it myself. I pop my neck or my, you know, knuckles or whatever. But I actually had to work up to that because it is – you do feel like – the first time it happens, you do feel like, okay, something that shouldn't move has just moved. And you feel especially vulnerable, you know, and you realize just in many ways how badly the human body is put together. You know, because everything about us evolved because we've got such huge brains that the entire – when you really think about it, this is actually fascinating. This is a thing I didn't know. But, you know, the entire way that the human body is created is just to facilitate. We are really just a bucket for our brain because we've got brains that are disproportionately large, especially compared with other animals, you know, which is why we've got such huge heads, relatively speaking. But, of course, you know, it's just a whole – and then has, you know, it's a whole thing about that and walking upright.
And then we walk upright, which is completely unnatural,
yeah.
Which is why so many people have, like, back problems because it's just not – it's not natural.
Yeah.
It's not natural for animals to be walking the way we walk.
Well, and it's like the whole thing of, you know, because here's the other thing people don't really realize. Because we walk upright, that actually changes. So that changes the way that the birth canal or whatever is aligned or set up. And so as a result, human babies, human offspring have to be much more underdeveloped and defenseless and tiny, basically, when they're born to, like, get out of there. Whereas opposed to other creatures, where it's like, you know, the baby tiger is born and like a minute later it's killing gazelle. You know, it's like leaping to the top of a hill and roaring.
Baby horses that just sort of jump up and go, I'm running around.
I'm off to Preakness. You know, and it's like, but meanwhile, you're born and you just sit there in your own feces for like a year or whatever while your mom like has to whip out the boob every time you need to eat. So, I mean, it's just, yeah, we're effed. I mean, we are so frail. So there's that story we had a couple years ago where it's a guy was just like walking along and literally tripped on like, I swear to God, like a patch of leaves or something on the sidewalk, walking along the street, bah, 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 leaves, trips, falls, and just lands at just the wrong angle, just dead. Just falls, just hits his head, dead, snaps his neck.
I have an in-law of some, I can't remember exactly how I'm related to this person, but that happened, I think, about a year ago. She went to the dentist, and she got up out of the dentist chair before she'd completely gotten over the twilight sleep thing. And she just keeled forward and hit her head on the corner of the counter and died.
Wow. All right.
We're a lot more fragile than we think we are.
This is why I don't get high, at least not intentionally, because it would just freak me out. All right. See, I'm still getting it. Maybe you should ask your new best friend, Satan, to bring you a Viso, Rick. All right. Thanks so much. I appreciate that. Let's see. Somebody said, is today's program truly just going to be about butts and Satan? If so, I'm going to take the rest of the day off and listen live. Yes. Yes, it is. Here's Don Taylor.
More than 680,000 Halloween-themed lanterns sold at Dollar Tree stores pose fire and burn hazards. Kim Dulick with the Consumer Product Safety Commission explains what parents should do if they have these recalled products.
The consumer believes that if they purchase one of these recalled lanterns, they should immediately remove the battery and return the lantern to their nearest Dollar Tree store for a complete refund.
Or maybe don't just buy products that are supposed to contain fire at the dollar store.
Well, I don't think they actually contain fire. I think
it's a lantern, right?
Yeah.
Is it like an electric lantern?
Yeah.
It's not like a candle holder.
No, I think it has like a light bulb of some sort in it.
I thought it was like this. See, I've got like this. I've got this thing. It's a cast iron owl, which is really one of the most bitchin' things that I own. And it's not as cool as the pumpkin, but it, like nothing is. It's a cast iron owl, and then you put candles inside of it, and then it has this cool like flickering glow. And I thought it was that sort of a thing, like a stylized. Or have you the Martha, this is just the gayest sounding thing ever, but you know, what are you going to do? So Martha Stewart makes these fabulous Halloween items, Don. It's
I am a fan of Martha's Halloween stuff, by the way. I really am.
Oh, yeah. Let me just tell you, no
Martha
lie.
Martha does Halloween.
Seriously. I'm not even going to the front, like I haven't bought stuff. I own many, many things from the Martha Stewart Halloween collection. And by the way, with the Christmas collection, too. That's where it started. I bought some Martha Stewart Christmas stuff a couple years ago. But she is now partnered with, I forget the name of the company, but it's like Martha Stewart and so-and-so have gotten together and have created this Halloween. She has, I mean, the Martha Stewart company really does have like the most righteous Halloween decorations you've ever seen. I purchased these, I don't even know what they're called. It's like it's basically the facade of like a haunted mansion, and it's like purple glass, and then you burn a candle behind it, and it lights. So it's cast iron and purple glass, and you burn a candle behind it, and it sort of lights up from, you know, from the back. So it's like a stained glass house almost that flickers with the candlelight. And I guess you could use like an electric candle or something, but that's lame. So it's fantastic. So I thought this was that.
No, it's this thing. I'm showing you the picture.
Oh my God, that looks incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, they're just these little plastic things that have batteries in them and these little bulbs. And apparently, the bulbs can overheat.
This would be
like a fire hazard.
Like that time I bought those pre-made nachos at the dollar store.
Well, in fact, here, what's her name? Kim Dulick describes the products here.
These lanterns are about 6.5 inches tall, and they're molded to look like a pumpkin, a ghost, and a skull. They were sold at Dollar Tree, Dollar Bill, and occasion stores nationwide between August and October of 2010.
Consumers are advised to take the recalled lanterns away from children immediately. They should then remove and properly dispose of the batteries and return the lanterns to where they were purchased for a full refund of, I'm guessing,
a dollar.
A dollar.
There you go. Less shipping and handling.
By the way, the Martha Stewart thing, I think Martha Stewart gets a bad rap.
I dig her. I am a Martha Stewart fan.
I used to subscribe to the magazine. In fact, when I moved out of my house, it was kind of painful because I had to give up an entire shelf of saved Martha Stewart Living magazines, which I had never wanted to get rid of because I just knew at some point I would go back and I would do all
You'd
of these fabulous
yeah.
things. But I never actually did. But, yeah, as far as just crafts, you know, how you can make really cool stuff yourself. And also, her cookies. You go online to Martha Stewart Living, her cookie recipes are flawless. Absolutely flawless.
The thing about Martha Stewart is, here's the deal, and we should do one more. We'll take a break. It's poor Anna Griffin sitting in the kitchen while we're talking about Martha Stewart and cookies. This has apparently become a wholly different kind of program than the one that was all about Satan and butts like half an hour ago.
We love Satan. And we love cookies.
And Martha Stewart. And all those things are possible. But the things that people hate about Martha Stewart are in one sense, separate from, yet in another sense, responsible for all of the things that are great about her, which is that she has a fiendish attention to detail, mm-hmm. is that Martha Stewart sincerely and honestly believes that, and it's not to sound like I'm pitching for her, but, that cool stuff doesn't have to cost a lot, and that you don't have to, like, break the bank to have a thing that looks, you know, to have a decoration either that you purchase or that you make that is great. But she's just, like, such a C about it because her whole thing is, like, it could be better. Work harder, you know?
Oh, yeah, and she's crazy.
Yeah.
I have this biography of her at home, which is just awesome, which is just the whole unauthorized biography about Martha Stewart, which is just awesome. Awesome. And yeah, she's a horrible person,
yeah.
And she's crazy as a loon. But at the same time, though, yeah, the things that come out of the Martha Stewart factory are perfect. They are flawless. Everything that comes out of there is just, whether it's a product or a paint color or a recipe, just perfect.
See, on that we can all agree. Let's do one more. We'll take a break.
A California microbrewery called the Port Brewing Company is getting some negative publicity after a Bay Area feminist targeted one of their Halloween-themed brews, which is called Lost Abbey Witch's Wit. The label on the bottle features a buxom woman about to be burned at the stake. This month, the Bay Area feminist urged colleagues to contact the brewery and, quote, protest this hateful and dangerous expression which dehumanizes women. In the email from Vicki Noble, she questions if a brewery would market a beer with images of other persecuted minorities being tortured or executed. The Port Brewing Company apologized if anyone was offended by the label. The owner went on to say he was ignorantly unaware of any mistake when the label was placed on the Witch's Wit beer. The company says it will gladly change the label, and it's considering holding a design contest for a replacement right after Halloween.
Why don't we have a contest to get her a little companionship, see if she can be a little less tight-assed about things in the future. That's, I'm just saying. I mean, maybe, you know, like when the Halloween rush is over. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. Can I just tell you this, and not for a prurient reason, just linguistically,
right.
I find it a pleasing word. You know, I like the word buxom.
It's
a great word.
Voluptuous is also a really nice word.
Now, and forgive my male ignorance, and does buxom, does that just mean like a large-chested woman, or
yes.
Is that like an all-over?
No, it means busty.
But it's not like an hourglass figure as such. It is just the up top.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. It's just, so that notwithstanding, I mean, that's a side benefit, I suppose. It's just a cool-sounding word.
It is.
Here's another word. This is a really pleasant word, not a thing you want to have. It's like a, you know, diarrhea. It's a pleasant-sounding word if you didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
Like if somebody, like if it was a French lord or something, we're going to be vacationing on the Brook of Diarrhea, you know, or whatever. Or if it was like the name of somebody's boat or their castle.
Yeah, it has a very elegant sort of a sound.
It has sort of a nice flow to it. It's a shame.
So to speak.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame that it got, I mean...
We're talking about butts again now.
Oh, that's right. Well, look, a leopard can't change his spots, Don. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio
it's
program. Thank you for... Are you just going to start ending sentences with in his pants?
Maybe.
Okay. That's fantastic. Let's take a moment to talk about other words and other tongues. This would be Spanish in particular. Castalia Language Center. You can find out more about them by going to portlandspanish.com. That is portlandspanish.com. One of the things I got to talk to them, I got to talk to Claire Grebel and find out this business of whether .com is said... I mean, leaving French people out of the equation because they kind of march to their own thing. But whether they say .com like in Spanish or like in Croatian or whatever, if .com has become a sort of like a universal thing.
Would Claire Grebel know about Croatian?
Probably not, but I mean, you know, it's like, look, you know, you can't learn it all in one day. You got to learn one step at a time, Don. Which is why if you are an adult maybe wanting to learn Spanish as a second or tertiary language or whatever, maybe if you spoke some Spanish back then, but you don't now, you want to brush up your, you know, on your skills, you want to be able to fine-tune it, to hone your Spanish skills before you travel abroad, you know, before you move, or just because you like to know stuff and you want to keep your brain sharp as a tack, you can contact Castalia Language Center at portlandspanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com. Now, if you had a whole family, well, first of all, you probably don't have to worry about this because your kids are probably getting Spanish taught to them in school. Kids learn that younger and younger every year. Adults, you know, you maybe learned it for a year or two and then just kind of fell out of your head. So Castalia Language Center is adults only. They, you know, they just cater to adults when it comes to Spanish because they learn differently than kids and teens do. And they can also adjust to your schedule, whether it's the day of the week or the time of day that works best for you. And they will find something that works with whatever your Spanish fluency currently is. Find out more about them at PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com. It is Castalia Language Center. We are back after this with Anna Griffin from the Oregonian. Also, Job Watch on the way, Corpse Watch, and the top five songs about Satan. You stay there. We're back after this. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Got golden fingers, and we're loved everywhere we go. We sing about beauty and we sing about truth. At $10 million a show, we take all kind of pills that give all kind of thrills. But the thrill that we've never known is the thrill that it gets you when you get your picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone.
I wanna see my picture on the cover.
Rolling Stone.
I wanna buy five copies for my mother.
Rolling Stone.
My smiling face on the cover of the Rolling Stone. I got a freaky old lady named Cooking Kitty who embroiders on my jeans. I got my poor old gray-haired daddy driving my limousine. Now it's all designed to blow our minds, but our minds won't really be blown like the blow that'll get you when you get your picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone.
I want to see my picture on the cover.
Rolling Stone.
I want to buy five copies for my mother.
Rolling Stone.
I want to see my smiling face on the cover. Got a lot of little teenage blue-eyed groupies who do anything we say. We got a genuine Indian guru, he's teaching us a better way. We got all the friends that money can buy, so we never have to be alone. And we keep getting richer, but we can't get our picture on the cover of a Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone.
I wanna see my picture on the cover. On the cover of the Rolling Stone. On the cover of the Rolling Stone. Wanna see my picture on the cover. Gonna buy five copies for my mother. See my smiling face on the cover of the Rolling Stone. On the cover of the Rolling Stone.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Don Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Thursday.
A local hotel will provide storage for homeless people. Florida restaurants are sparring over Brooklynized water. And China has beat out the U.S. with the world's fastest supercomputer.
All right, then. It's 503-505-6964 still to come. Also, we have a Job Watch on the way, Corpse Watch on the way, and the top five songs about Satan, which I now feel compelled to put into sort of to do auditory quotes around that. Once the program has come to an end, we'll decide the actual proper title for said top five. We also have to talk about our Geek-O-Lantern contest, so that is on the way as well. Let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson program. She writes a twice-weekly column about life in Portland and Multnomah County, one of our favorite people, the Oregonians, Anna Griffin. Hello.
Hello, Rick.
How are you today?
I'm great. The top five songs about Satan, not by Satan.
Well, it was, you missed this either interesting... It was either interesting or unbelievably pedantic or possibly both, because those aren't necessarily mutually exclusive on the show. Discussion early on where I was, because we were trying to do sort of a Halloween themed thing all week. And so this morning I was at home and I was racking my brain, and Dawn had already done top five songs about dead teenagers. Mm-hmm. And I think we already did the top five songs from a horror film and top five scores from a horror film. And I thought, well, what's more Halloween-themed than the Dark Lord himself? Bam! So then it becomes a process of whittling down, because, you know, like, especially in certain forms of music, like every third song, everything that's not about heroin.
Do you have to just cut out metal, period?
Ah, no. See, I'm glad you asked this. These were the rules of clarification that I set down for myself. So often, no one cares how the sausage is made, Anna Griffin, so I am glad that you have expressed, even if it's a feigned interest, I'm glad that it's there.
No, this is what I do for a living. Find out how things work.
You asked the tough questions. I made this rule. One was, I will do the first rule last, because that's where the sort of contention came in. Mm. There couldn't be more than one song by an artist. And you couldn't, because otherwise it's just nothing but, it's like nothing but Slayer and Ozzy, whatever. So it had to be the one song per artist. The second rule was, I actually, for the most part, I just eschewed the blues genre, because otherwise they would just, you know, they would just own the entire thing. I mean, it's just like, they would, you know, they'd just be the cleaning house there. And so the third rule that I had was that it had to be about, and this seemed so sensible at the time, if only I had known just the sort of satanic tempest that this was going to create inside the teapot of this very fine radio program, I just decided it had to be about a literal, actual Satan, you know, as opposed to a metaphorical or a figurative Satan. But apparently that's not what I said. I don't even remember what I said at the beginning of the show.
Well, you said that it was top five songs about Satan. And then when you were explaining your rules, you said that it wasn't about like a figurative thing. It couldn't be a metaphor. It had to be about an actual demonic presence.
Right.
And I said, but... You said, though, that they all had to be about Satan. And you said, yes. And then I said, but then you just said, a demon. And Satan is a very specific figure. You can't just say a demon and then say Satan. They're two different
things. It has to be Beelzebub.
This is my point. But then it led to this entire sort of like this weird, like Socratic navel gazing conversation, which I thought I had left behind when I left Catholic school, about the nature of Satan, and if it was Satan as defined sort of culturally or by a specific faith or religion, because again, just as some religions believe there to be the three persons and one God, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, that there are other religions who believe that is a bunch of balderdash and poppycock, and that they are separate, that there is no divine unity.
See, now I would be able to accept though Beelzebub, Lucifer, Satan, all as the same guy for the purposes of this exercise. But it was when you said a demon, a demonic, then I thought you were just kind of being far vaguer than you.
When I come back during the Christmas season, are we going to do top five Jesus songs?
It's entirely
probably
possible.
Okay.
If it's going to be just this much fun, then how can we not?
Which son of God are we talking about, Rick?
Here's the thing, and I won't rehash the entire conversation, but it seemed to make so much sense this morning, but I realize now, with the endless painful wisdom of hindsight, that was actually before I'd had any caffeine. Mm-hmm. And it was right around the same time that the whole maelstrom of my wife's phone call, taking the dogs to the groomer, leaving the Viso on top of my car, stepping in the dog, whatever, outside, falling in the mud, going inside, getting the dog wrapped around me, and then realizing when I got in here that I'd forgotten everything else. It was created in this fiendish swirl of mental activity.
So satanic world.
That's what I'm saying. So it was like, it was almost as if the dark hand of the beyond itself came down and interfered with my creation of this list. So get off my back. It's really what I'm saying, Don. All right. Thank you. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. In just a moment, we will talk to Anna Griffin about the election coming up next week, as well as whatever else is crossing the transom of her mind. At the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
A Florida bagel restaurant.
I'm sorry, where?
Florida.
That's right.
Has taken a pizza-making competitor to court over claims that the Lake Worth restaurant stole a filtration process used to Brooklynize its water. New York City tap water is so pure that it doesn't have to be filtered, and residents have long claimed it is the secret behind the city's famous bagels and pizza. In response to the allegations, Mamma Mia's Trattoria and Brick Oven Pizzeria accused the original Brooklyn Water Bagel Company of illegally patenting the process.
The original Brooklyn Water Bagel Company. Are you sure? Was this translated into Japanese first and then brought back to us?
No.
The Smile Time Happy Fun Zambleback Wish Show.
Well, they accused them of illegally patenting the process, which makes water taste like it came from the Big Apple. Brooklyn Water Bagel has demanded that Mamma Mia stop using the system, while Mamma Mia wants Brooklyn Water Bagel to pay upwards of a $1 million fine for trying to get a patent in the first place.
A Brooklyn Water Bagel sounds like some particularly unpleasant form of cyst that you would have, maybe from sitting for long periods of time on the city's subway.
Wouldn't you go there before Mamma Mia's Trattoria and...
For
brick oven pizza, we're Italian,
well,
really, joint.
And I wonder whether this is... See, this seems like a thing that the Mythbusters guys ought to tackle, because this was actually referenced in an episode of Entourage a couple years ago, where they were ordering... I forget what it was. They wanted bagels or pizza or something or other. You know, there's like from the neighborhood, but they're in L.A. And so I forget whether they actually ordered the dough made and shipped to them, or whether they actually ordered, like, huge bottles of Brooklyn water. It was one of the two, but it was the same, and it was the first time I'd ever heard this, which is amazing considering the number of people I know who are from New York, and given, like the near pathological inability of New Yorkers to go more than 10 seconds without telling you about how something is better in New York. But it was the whole thing about the pizza and the bagels taste better there because they use the Brooklyn water or whatever. So I wonder if that is actually true, if it's just like some crap that people believe because they've always thought it.
Well, another theory is that it could be something similar to sourdough bread in San Francisco, because San Francisco sourdough bread actually ends up tasting different than sourdough bread made other places, because there are very specific yeast bacteria in the air there. And so there's a theory that it's not really the water that makes, you know, New York pizza crust and New York bagels, so that it could actually be a specific kind of, like, yeast bacteria.
Made with real New Yorkers.
Yes.
So it's like, some sort of a fungus or something that's in the whatever.
Perhaps. Something.
Right.
I don't know.
Pizza bagels are nasty, by the way.
Is that a bagel that looks like it tastes like a pizza, or is it a pizza that tastes like a bagel?
A pizza bagel, I believe it is a. Well, there's a couple of different things they do with bagels, like the bagel dogs, where they wrap bagel dough around the outside of a hot dog.
Now, I'm a fan of that, though. See, here's the thing: that's not a thing that I find fault with. I didn't expect to like that, but I really did.
Yeah, pizza bagel is a pizza kind of made out of a bagel. But it's always substandard sauce and cheese and everything, too. So it just
tastes
awful.
It's just not – the consistency is not appropriate.
It's too chewy.
Yeah.
I think it may be maybe it is to my detriment that the only pizza bagels I've ever had, like, were frozen and came from a bag at Safeway and said Geno's on the side. So it's not like I was really getting the authentic East Coast experience there.
I don't know if there is an authentic East Coast pizza bagel.
Well, but I'm saying it didn't have – I mean, I'm assuming that they probably don't go to a great amount of expense in terms of where are we going to get the water for this frozen crap that we're going to sell to some schmuck at a Safeway. You know, that's probably just whatever comes out of the tap at, like, the Geno's factory in Tijuana. Probably. That would just be – I mean, I'm just speculating. I could be way off there.
Probably.
Here's the thing about the pizza dog. Here's probably why I like the pizza dog. I think it was – I was preconditioned to like it because when I was a younger man, I worked at the Orange Julius at the mall. And here's the thing. At Orange Julius, they sell a pizza dog there, which is it's a different kind of a thing. It really is just like the same crap slathered with tomato sauce. But I had already mentally prepared myself for the existence of a pizza dog, and I was primed to accept it as being good.
You know, the Orange Julius is sort of magically delicious.
The Orange Julius. Here's the thing about the Orange Julius.
That weird powdered
something
egg white,
in the water.
It's the powdered egg white sugar substance that they stick in to make the Orange Julius.
I have to say that the Orange Julius and even like the Raspberry Julius, the Strawberry Julius, I'm a fan of all of those things. Less so now, I think, because as I get older, as much as I've never been a fan of sweet things, I am, with every passing year, I'm less and less a fan of them. And those are so sweet. I mean, they just make your teeth hurt, but they are really good. The only problem with working, I mean, one of the problems with working in Orange Julius is that you're like 8 inches away from a blender for like 9 hours a day.
In a mall.
Yeah, in a mall. And it's like, but you just want to go home to like, you want to go to like some sort of sensory deprivation tank at the end because you are just, I literally heard blenders in my sleep. I would just go to bed and I would just thing of the deal ramping up.
It's one of those things, it's like a Cinnabon. Would you ever think of ingesting that outside a mall?
Here's the thing about the Cinnabon, and I have long wondered if this was just a me thing. And so now that we can just be a sort of mini focus group for this, the thing about it, look, I love me a good cinnamon roll. Don't get me wrong. Well done cinnamon roll, that's one of life's true pleasures, right up there with a perfectly brewed glass of iced tea. The thing about Cinnabon, though, is it always seems like the thing needs to go back into the oven for like another 10, 12 minutes. It never feels – but like – are we the only people on earth who feel that way? Because it never seems done to me. It's like I've bitten into something that wasn't quite ready to come out.
I think the problem is that they're just too big. You know, they're really too big, and then they probably undercook them so that they don't get stale too quickly, because that way they could actually hold them and sell them for longer. So yeah, they are a little on the underdone side, and so they do end up being kind of mushy.
Yeah.
And at the size of your head.
Yeah, and then they're just massively huge, and they are literally something like 1,500 calories. One of those things is literally the same amount of calories you should be ingesting for the entire day.
Well, posting caloric contents changes the way you look at food.
Oh, goddamn. I was at some coffee house or something in Seattle a couple of years ago. And that didn't really matter to me because I wasn't going to order it. But I was sitting, it was like at a Pete's Coffee or something. And I don't think we have to do that here in Portland. They don't have to list what's in stuff. But Seattle was one of the first cities to do that. And I was looking up and it was like one of those things that they market to Americans, like they do with most alleged coffee drinks. It really is not so much a coffee drink as it is like a milk and sugar drink.
Yeah.
I mean, Starbucks is like the largest purveyor of milk. That's what they sell. It just happens to be dosed with coffee every now and again. And they were selling this. It was like an Oreo, like coffee milkshake kind of thing. And I swear to Christ, it was 3,900 calories. I actually asked the guy, I said, like, am I seeing, do I have myopia? Is there, like, did you put an extra zero on there? And he's like, nope, 3,900, dude, as though he'd been asked that many times.
So I could live on this for 3 days.
It was
astounding. Is what you're telling me.
That's how they should sell it. It's what a value. For $4, you're set for the week.
It's like a meal ready to eat. You know what I mean? It's like you're gonna be attacking the Taliban and you're not gonna get a chance to have more grub for like, you know, a week and a half. So here you go.
Here's your Oreo macchiato milkshake, and it's served with a tiny container of Tabasco sauce.
Jesus.
Just like in the army.
It's like the time that I realized I went through this phase. I used to be a big spongy bastard, and it's like my metabolism is such that like I'm never gonna be a big guy. I'm never gonna be a bowling ball or whatever. But I get flabby is the thing. I become just sort of just like skin and fat, where I'm a thin fat person, and I have no tone and no shape and whatever. And that was just because I got to a certain point where my eating stayed the same, but my metabolism slowed.
Women love it, by the way, when men of a certain age talk about their metabolism.
Yeah,
you guys have no clue.
Oh no, I trust me. I recognize the fact that I am lucky in most respects. I did
skinny
win.
Bastard.
A few months ago, my husband stopped eating fast food and stopped drinking soda. That was the only change he made to his diet. He lost 30 pounds in like 3 months. Boom, it just fell off. Like, good for you, sir.
Sean Levy, the movie critic of The Oregonian, I saw him last year and hadn't seen him in a while, and he looked like a cancer patient.
He's positively skinny now.
And I said, what happened to you? And he said, I stopped drinking alcohol.
Well, because I think, and maybe, and I said, well, maybe this is the difference between men and women, that I think men latch on perhaps to, because we got such tiny brains. I mean, we're basically just one-celled organisms, and we can only, you know, it's like we're a hand that can only juggle like the one ball at a time. And I think men maybe latch onto a specific food that they consume just so wildly disproportionately to everything else. Because my thing was, a few years ago, I cut out fast food, you know, like drive-through fast food, more or less altogether. I'm going to do it a couple times a year, whatever. But the thing I did, it's that thing where I got a glimpse of myself, like in one of those like three-panel mirrors at Macy's or something. I was putting on pants. And it looked like I had swallowed, you know, like the entire contents of a Sizzler or something. It was just sort of resting over my belt line. And I thought, oh, that's bad. And I realized that I would just, like 5 days a week, I was eating like Kraft macaroni. And not just one box, which they say, by the way, that's 4.5 servings in that one box. I was eating two of those at a sitting every day. That is 9 meals I was having every day. And I calculated, it was literally something like 6,500 calories. I mean, it was absurd. It was like I was one of those guys eating the old 97 steak at the, you know, at the place so he can like get his meal for free or whatever. But I stopped that, and it's like, and I was, you know, I was able to lose some weight. So I realized that I am fortunate in that regard, though. I don't have to deal with the metabolism way most people do. I'm not going to get like the whole hot flash thing happening or whatever. You know, I don't have to, that's not waiting down the road for me. So I am lucky in that sense. Mm. I don't even know how we got onto this topic.
It started with pizza and bagels.
Jesus.
And then it went to cinnamon buns and Orange Julius's such.
We are here with Anna Griffin, who writes a twice-weekly column about Portland and Multnomah County for the Oregonian. So next Tuesday is election. Well, we call it Election Day, but it's just the last day for the ballots.
It's a bit of a misnomer, but yes, your ballots are due next Tuesday.
That's that thing where we were lamenting earlier this week. We no longer get the sort of neck and neck. You know, it looks like he's up by 2%. Now he's fallen behind, but we haven't counted this section of the city yet. They just basically, at like 8:05, they just announced the winner. Do they scan the ballots like now, but then hold the results? Or do they actually not even start doing the counting until it's done, do you think?
You know, I don't even know the answer to that question.
I don't know.
That's a great question.
I've always been curious because it seems like they get the results really quickly, even given the fact that they're going to be scanned electronically.
Oh, well, they just make it up.
Well, yeah. I mean, how would we know? Hey, that's a good question. Does anybody, does somebody stand in the room while they're doing all this stuff and look at it to make sure that there's no shenanigans going on?
There are no shenanigans going on.
I mean, is it they have the counters, but there's like somebody else?
It's
like,
not just like one guy by himself in a closet, no.
Do they film it? Do they film the counting of the ballots?
I don't know that it's required that they film it. I suspect if you wanted to see it, you could go actually see it.
I did a story on an election when I was working in Columbia County, and actually got to go to the courthouse and go into the room where everyone was counting the ballots. And they did have like tables and tables of little mostly elderly men and women sitting there opening everything up and tallying everything. But security was very, very strict and very specific. You know, I couldn't bring a camera in. I wasn't allowed to bring like a number two pencil or something into the room. I mean, there were all of these very specific rules about what I could do as someone who was coming in. And there was like a handler with me at all times.
Really?
Yeah.
We take this stuff very seriously.
Yeah. That's interesting. It never occurred to me that they would actually be so, but I guess it makes sense. It's like, I mean, a friend of mine today, it was a story on like the treasury, wherever they print the money. And she said, I mean, I guess this makes a lot more sense, but she said that like even the security she anticipated like paled in comparison to what the security actually was. I mean, it was like basically that like Jennifer Garner thing where they're scanning your retina, you know, and you're standing in the clean room before you can get into the, you know, the Credit Dauphine place. So I mean, it was unreal. So the election, so everything draws to close next Tuesday, 8:00. I know that you one of your pieces or one of the things you're going to be writing is why voting matters, which is one of those things that I tend to be sort of reflexively cynical about. So I'll just throw it out to you without coloring the question at all. Anna Griffin, why does voting matter?
Wow, it feels like we need some sort of trumpet introducing.
I could find a fanfare if you'd like. Hold on a second. Let me see if
you
I
must
can.
You must have some kind of patriotic music you could play.
I probably do. Hold on a bit. Let me see if it. That's not the patriotic music.
No.
Hold on. I've got... This is the closest thing I've got. Look, it's either... Right now, it's either going to be this, or I've got the...
Don't you have, like, the Hail to the Chief music or something for the Democracy on the March?
Hold
actually,
on.
That was very appropriate for our democracy.
Let me just hold on.
That's not Democracy on the March.
No, I got nothing. All right. Well, we'll call it this for now. Anna Griffin from The Oregonian, please now to explain, why does voting matter?
It is your fundamental duty and right as a citizen of these United States. Because government affects pretty much every aspect of your life every single day. The roads that you drive on, the sidewalks that you walk on, the water that you drink, how much you pay for power, how much you pay for health insurance, whether you can get health insurance, whether you can drive a car. I mean, everything you do, government regulates it. And that, in that respect, the Tea Partiers are absolutely right. Government is very, very big. And if you don't vote, you essentially give up the right to complain about how things are run. You can't complain about the problem.
Rick doesn't agree with that.
Work I'm just, toward the solution.
No, Rick believes he can complain
And has Rick voted yet?
No, let me just say, first of all, the silence there was not, it's not because I was just thinking of something pithy or excoriating to say. It was because I didn't want to be accused of, you know, I didn't want to throw the question out and then jump in with, like, that's a lie, Anna Griffin. Selling me a bill of goods. I will actually say that my thinking on this has sort of come around in recent years. And yes, you damn woman, Rick Emerson has voted. He hasn't dropped it off yet, though. Which I got to do the thing of finding the place like now, because you go to like the library or something, right?
If you haven't dropped it off yet, you haven't actually voted.
Well, okay, that's a fair point. I'm that guy that's like every year, you know, I'm going to the place that's on Belmont or whatever.
You're the reason it takes till 8:05, not 8:04.
Because it's like, is it me and just a bunch of people like me that have all realized at the very last moment, you know, like Christmas Eve, that we haven't done any shopping and so I'm standing in line or whatever. So my goal there is, because I think you can just drive by a place and there's just a drop off box. It's not the the post office?
There are different places. I don't know if they still do this. A couple of years ago, I just dropped it off in the Fred Meyer parking lot.
There are drop boxes, libraries.
Yeah.
You sure you actually voted? You didn't just hand it to some guy, right? Some guy named Snuffy?
Yeah. You got an envelope for me?
Snuffy'd
like
a dollar.
Yes, I do.
All right.
Yeah. It turned out he thought it was graft.
All right. Snuffy's father attacked by ninjas, needs money to find retribution skills. All right. Or a ballot. Thank you. My voting thoughts have come around a little bit in recent years because I used to be, I want to say that I was aggressively anti-voting, but I used to be very, very reflexive in the sense.
How can you be anti-voting?
Because I used to be.
And puppies are bad.
When I was somewhat younger, I mean, a lot of it had to do with the fact that I was just, I mean, I know this is not hard to believe, but I was once a bigger jackass than I am now. And that seems to defy, like, one of the laws of thermodynamics, but it was true, I assure you. I have any number of ex-girlfriends who will verify that that was, in fact, the case.
You know the people that were accused of hating freedom?
That's me.
He hates our freedom.
And rainbows, Don. A lot of it was just that I was, you know, I was just kind of a young, obnoxious talk show host and just, you know, just sort of went out of my way to find really, like, aggressively contrarian positions, you know, for everything. You know, but some of it was also just that it just seemed like such a fundamentally deceptive system that is set up. Not in just the vague, you know, overarching kind of, you know, well, voting never really ever changed anything. I remember, as dumb as this may sound, as cliche as this may sound, after the whole debacle with the 2000 election and Gore and Bush and whatever, I think the moment when it finally clicked into my head that I was partially right but partially wrong, I guess what I was going to say is that I think that the smaller the community in which you are voting, in other words, the smaller the election, probably the more it does matter. So I do think that voting for, like, things in Multnomah County, that matters a hell of a lot more than voting for president, which I think probably has negligible benefit. And on that, I have not really changed my opinion. I think the difference between putting a guy like George W. Bush in office and putting a guy like Al Gore in office might seem really drastic and obvious, but that is only if you assume that they are, in fact, the shot callers. And I don't mean that in some, like, a conspiratorial sort of Illuminati kind of a way. I just mean that the government is a very slow-moving, very moneyed, infinitely layered and complex process. And the idea that one guy can drastically change the outcome in most situations is just not true. It is true in some situations, and 9/11 might be one of those, where the tone and tenor of the times and the confluence of events was such that George Bush had all of the planets line up and he had probably more power and freedom to make unilateral changes than other presidents would have had. Leaving those kind of instances aside, those things notwithstanding, because they are the exception, I think for most periods that a president is in office, the amount of change they can affect, good or bad, is almost nil. The system just does what it does, and it has an inexorable folding, unfolding that happens. And I think the president can't influence that much at all. The smaller you get, though, you know, you go from the federal elections to state elections to county elections, I think the closer to home it is, probably the more your vote actually matters. So I think you and I agree on that. The only other observation I was going to make is I remember during the 2000 election and that whole, you know, the debacle that happened and the endless sort of analysis of it afterwards. I remember actually sitting there and watching. It was like 60 Minutes or somebody, you know, maybe I'm naive, but I've always felt like 60 Minutes gives me this kind of the straight scoop on things, you know, that they're not just peddling a bunch of falsehoods at me. And they were actually just showing a bunch of absentee ballots that were past the date by which they had to be submitted. Because Catherine Harris or whoever had said, like, absentee ballots have got to be in by, like, December 5th or something. It was whatever the date was by which they weren't going to be counted. I mean, overseas ballots were not going to be counted by this day. And so then they just held up, like, a huge pile of letters that, you know, of ballots that had come in, like, December 15th. And then right underneath the date showing that they were clearly invalid was a thing saying, like, accepted and counted by the state of Florida. And I went, well, all right, there you go. And that was just a kind of a confirmation of everything that I had sort of suspected.
I would look at it this way, though. I agree with you in the sense that when it comes to national elections, it is foolish to think that you cast your ballot today and tomorrow everything changes. I think that's part of the reason the left has been so frustrated with President Obama, because, you know, many of us made the mistake of assuming that he would get elected, we would celebrate, and things would change overnight. Yay! It's not the way it works. I mean, change on the national level, the shift of state is massive, and it takes an awfully long time to change course, even a tiny degree. If it didn't matter, special interest groups on both sides would not spend millions and millions and millions of dollars trying to win your vote or trying to get you not to vote for somebody or trying to get you to pull out of the process completely. You know, national elections, no, it's change takes a long time. But if Obama wasn't president, we would have, you know, a couple new conservative-leaning Supreme Court justices. And in the 2012 presidential election, you're going to think your vote doesn't matter, but there are going to be even more Supreme Court justices up for whoever the president is after that. So in terms of the grand scheme of history, your vote does matter. It just might take a while longer than it does on the local level to feel that effect.
Dawn actually had the most brilliant idea the other day. She was suggesting that we institute some system whereby, as an inducement to get people to vote, that once you vote, they give you like a little, like the whole, like the sticker you put on that said, I voted today, and that you can just have your TV scan that, and then you don't have to see any more campaign ads.
Think about what the kids in Starship Troopers had to go through to get the right to vote.
Okay, no,
see,
look, why do you have to shame me?
There you go.
What a fool I've been. I feel like I have to, now I feel like I feel like John Newton. I just have to go renounce my past.
You're like a giant bug on another planet spitting your laser saliva at our freedoms.
My saliva of apathy. All right, you are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. We'll have some more news here in just a skosh. Job Watch on the way. Corpse Watch. We'll do the top five songs about Satan and so forth. I should ask you, when we last spoke, you said that all the momentum seemed to be a lot of the momentum seemed to be going Dudley's way. Is that still the sort of the way that it seems to be?
I think things have shifted a little bit. I think if you know a couple of recent polls done in the past week show that it's exceptionally tight.
Is it always this way? Are the races always this close?
No, not gubernatorial races. People are very angry this year because of the economy, and so there's a certain anti-incumbent sense. And Kitzhaber hasn't been in office for a while, but he's clearly considered the incumbent. You know, we had Obama come in last week for Kitzhaber, which is a sign that the progressives are concerned about this enthusiasm gap we keep hearing about, and are trying to make sure that liberal voters in Multnomah County vote, because that's going to make the difference in the governor's race. We have Haley Barbour coming in, who's the governor of Mississippi, coming in this weekend to campaign for Chris Dudley. So clearly the Republicans think that Dudley has a really good chance. It's going to be really close.
You know, Haley Barbour, he was the head of the RNC, I think.
Oh, yes.
At one point. And he always struck me as a sort of Haley Barbour, if anybody's ever seen him on television, he's a little bit like Karl Rove in the sense that he seems outwardly sort of jocular. You know, just very sort of like, come sit on, you know, he's like a Burl Ives kind of a guy. He's just sort of, come sit on Uncle Haley's lap and tell him what you want for Christmas. But then when nobody's looking, you know, when nobody's looking, he shivs you.
See, I think of Boss Hogg. I think he should have the white suit and the hat.
Dude, that should just be right there. If the Republicans would just do that, if they would just embrace Boss Hogg, you know, as like they should get a logo that is not the elephant or whatever, you know, because that's from an earlier time. And they're always talking about how they can, you know, how they can shake things up and seem like a sort of fun-loving party and not just a bunch of stodgy, tight-ass white guys. They should totally just get like the huge thing with the horns on the hood and Boss Hogg and just, you know, and just sort of, with giving a big thumbs up, you know, and then lighting his cigar with $100 bill. It'd be like, vote Republican! I mean, which would be sort of, like, they might actually get my support just for the panache, the value of it.
Just the honesty of it all.
We talked a bit also about Measure 74, which is the medical marijuana thing, and do you know offhand where, like, what the sort of read on the state's leaning is on that, how they expect that to go? In California, they said it was actually – they thought it was going to pass overwhelmingly, and now they're saying that the you know, the California decriminalization laws, you know, there's been a huge push against it.
Yeah,
it's drawn closer.
The Oregonian had – not to pitch the Oregonian, but really, you should subscribe to the Oregonian. La, la, la. We had a poll last weekend, and I think it showed not good things for Metro 74.
And is it just because people are – so is it like a gut level fear, do you think? Or people just go, it has something to do with drugs. Let's just say no.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of it.
Is it that they're just, even if they don't quite grasp the nuance of it, or maybe they do, but they just feel like it's just a bad idea in general because of the association. It just gives them a bad feeling?
It has been painted by the editorial board of my paper and other papers and prosecutors and sheriffs and law enforcement types as being something that would open the door to essentially legalizing marijuana, which I disagree with that. But I think it's a very easy argument to make.
That is the opening salvo in the right. Well, you know, and the problem is
we're going to be overrun by potheads. How horrible would that be?
The marijuana guys, they've kind of shot themselves in the foot a little bit only because, I mean, they tried for so long to use, and I understand why they do this, but they tried for so long to use this whole, you know, like, well, let me talk to you about the wonders of hemp thing. And it's like, which is like so massively, you know, ineffective. But now, anytime they put forward any logical argument, it's like, because the hemp guys were always clearly just a bunch of like furry freak brother guys who just wanted to, you know, sit around and get lit. You know, which is fine. Rick Emerson doesn't care about that. I'm just saying.
These sheets are soft.
You'll be able to get like a better thread count. Your paper towels will be. My hands are huge, man. Where's my Allman Brothers? But it was just so clearly they were just these like hopheads, and they were using hemp to try to get that like in sort of underneath the radar, that now any logical argument put forward by the marijuana guys, people immediately, they have this Pavlovian response to going, you're just a hippie, you know, whether or not that's actually the case.
And all the stuff about hemp is absolutely true.
Oh, yeah.
It is amazing and miraculous, and there's all these wonderful. But when Woody Harrelson is your spokesman,
you need
no
to
one's going to take you seriously.
Take the leaf off all the ads, and everything needs to be about grandma and grandma getting her meds.
Well, that's the, you know, that's the thing, is it's like they really need to find, and I know this sounds horrible, but they really need to find the family. This is what I was running in some alternate world. In my first alternate world, I am Malcolm McLaren and I'm managing the Sex Pistols. In my second alternate world, sort of as a little fillip on that, I am Lee Atwater. And if Lee Atwater were managing this, what he would do is he would find the most strident anti-medical marijuana, most viciously anti-decriminalization person I possibly could. And then I'd find a member of their family that has cancer. And I would put them on every television everywhere. And I would just say, this guy wants his grandmother to die suffering and in agony from cancer. Do you want his grandmother to die? Why does he hate his grandmother? That's what you do, man. You just find somebody who's opposed to pot, and you find somebody in their family that has some horrible dread disease, and you stick them on every camera you can possibly find.
Hates voting, freedom, and grandma.
That's right. And rainbows. And the unicorns which run down them. So other than Dudley Kitzhaber and 74, is there anything else that's sort of a, I don't say big ticket, but like a marquee? Anything else that is notable, that the people really are talking about a lot?
Ron Wyden, U.S. Senator Ron Wyden, is up for re-election against Jim Huffman, who's a law professor at Lewis and Clark and will not win. There are some interesting congressional races to a degree because there's a lot of outside money coming in under new campaign finance laws that allow outside groups to spend money on campaigns and be very slow about reporting. Peter DeFazio, whose district includes Eugene and Springfield, is in what's turning out to be a much tougher race than anyone thought, against a guy named Art Robinson, who, you know, thinks we need to abolish public schools and that sort of thing, in large part because even though Robinson comes off as a little bit crazy, he's had a huge amount of money pumped in from mysterious forces on the East Coast.
Well, you know, as I was saying, the thing about the president, the one man can't have that much effect on the world. But as you were talking about the get rid of schools and that kind of thing, you really realize what an effect Ayn Rand has had on huge sections of this country. I mean, if you could just go back in some sort of Bradburian time machine and step on that butterfly, I mean, just think about it. Yeah. Think about like 80% of the a-holes you know in your day-to-day life. And if you could go back and eliminate Ayn Rand, how much less obnoxious those guys would be. And it's always guys, by the way. I don't know what that is. There's something about the male mind where there's a certain kind of guy that loves Ayn Rand because they get the feeling, you know, it's like you were saying yesterday, there's a certain kind of guy that likes women who sort of boss them around and are kind of mean and kind of, you know, with like hobnail boots and kind of, you know, get on your knees, worm, you know, and kind of kick him in the leg a little bit like Mom from Mom's Friendly Robot Company. Ayn Rand is that woman for many guys, and they all end up voting libertarian and listening to Frank Zappa, all of them.
Well, and the problem is, if you're going to be, I mean, I actually sort of respect where libertarians are coming from, but it's, you got to be intellectually consistent about it. If you want government to stay out of the environment and stay out of regulating business and stay out of educating our kids and stay out of building roads, keep them out of my bedroom too.
Well, it's like the guys who are, you know, want us to go back to a strict constitutional interpretation. Yet at the same time, they want to strip away the rights of people who were born to illegal immigrants in America, leaving aside the whole 14th Amendment thing, which is apparently not, you know, like in their world, part of the actual Constitution.
Don't you mean illegals?
Yes, that's right.
I noticed that the Constitution Party in the last few years, since I first encountered them about, I have to say about 10 years ago, was my first encounter in a professional capacity working for a newspaper with Constitution Party people. It seems like since then they have actually tried to scale back at least the public face of crazy a little bit. Like, they don't put in their brochures anymore that they think homosexuals should be rounded up and put into camps, which actually was in their materials 10 years ago when they were coming around and wanting us to, like, you know, sell them full page ads in our newspaper.
Those could be fun camps if you did it right.
That's true.
That's the sort of thing you can say. If I say that, then suddenly it's, you know, this is hate monger Rick Emerson.
It could be like Indigo Girls are playing every night.
It could be like Big Gay Al's Animal Sanctuary. It'd just be like a disco and everyone's full of love.
There's a cat for everyone.
Yeah.
You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Anna Griffin from the Oregonian. And I know you actually have to skedaddle here in a few.
Oh, I did. Yeah, I have to get my children.
You will not be able to bask in the glory of my top five songs about Satan. But the next time you're here, I'll shoot you the list via email, you know, just in case you're like, in case it's going to keep you up at night wondering if I'm hewing to a strictly biblical interpretation of our Dark Lord, you know, or like whatever. Before you get out of here, let's do one more visit to the news desk. We'll take a break, and then we'll get the top five here in just a few. You're listening to The Rick Emerson Show.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Well, let's do our job watch.
Here is your, is this happy news or bad news?
Neither, really.
All right, well, we'll just do this. Here's your job watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
Minimum wage!
Yeah! Here is Dawn Taylor with your job watch.
A survey by the website careerbliss.com of the most desirable places to work in the U.S. ranked Disney well below the Army. Despite the rising death tolls in Afghanistan, where thousands of soldiers are deployed, the bloodshed in Iraq, and the low pay, Americans still view the Army as a good employer. Disney, which employs more than 100,000 people worldwide and is billed as the happiest place on earth, came 41st in the career survey.
By the way, you were just talking about, you know, how the camp, you know, would be fantastically decorated, but still, you know, a prison camp. Disney. That's really what we're talking about right there. That's what that would be.
Workers at Disney's theme parks have called the work conditions there brutal and accused bosses of being motivated solely by profit. Some have even started to refer to the theme parks by the name Mauschwitz.
Wow.
Google topped the list of best employers, but it was beaten by the U.S. military when it came to career advancement.
I am so jealous that I didn't come up with that. Oh, my God. That's one of those things that's just been sitting there. That has been sitting there like a word fossil, waiting to be uncovered. And then somebody came up with that. And in just a glorious moment of epiphany, it was like when Al Jean of the Simpsons came up with the you know, Tai Chi Chai Tea joke for how Lisa relaxes. And at home I went, damn you, Al Jean! Mauschwitz. I'm going to start using that in casual, well, maybe not that casual of conversation, but now and again. All right.
Bradley Brummel, a psychology professor at the University of Tulsa, Oklahoma, explained why the military had happy workers. He told the Christian Science Monitor, despite challenges that may occur when serving our country, including the possibility of going to war, the military provides many of the essential elements to finding happiness at work, including having a meaningful impact on the world, having true camaraderie with your coworkers, and having the opportunities to develop skills.
Well, and everybody you see at Disneyland, the employees and the people I've known who've worked at Disneyland for any length of time, they all have that kind of, it's like the real brittle surface happiness and politeness, kind of like Marie Osmond seems to have, you know, where it's a big smile and it's just at any moment, you know, you think that she's probably just going to dissolve in a puddle of homicidal rage and tears, you know. But until that moment, there's like this pasted on grin on the face and this sort of weird Stepfordian kind of a thing. Was it you that worked at Disneyland?
No, but I've had a couple of friends that worked at Disneyland.
I mean, they're really draconian about, you know, I guess they've relaxed a little bit in recent years, but about the things you can wear, things you can look like, who they'll employ, who they won't. I mean, they're real, they're very, very strict about
that.
And
I do have a friend right now who works for Epcot. She and her husband both work for Epcot, and he works at the theme park, and she works at Epcot, and they both actually enjoy working for Disney very much. So
I wonder if that's one of those things where it's like the difference between working, you know, they talked about the difference between working at Apple and working in the Mac division at Apple, where one of them was basically just Steve Jobs was standing there, you know, like he was, on a galleon, just with a cat of nine tails.
Well, I think it very much depends on what you do. Like, if you're one of those people that performs in, like, the parades and stuff, apparently that is brutal. There are spotters all along the parade route, and you get docked or even fired if you're not smiling constantly.
Wow.
I mean, no, there are really sort of insane rules.
That's
for
awesome.
For the lower level employees. My friend Missy worked at the comedy club on Pleasure Island in Disney. enjoyed it very much. Now she's working at the Velcro Show, which is like a game show about Velcro at Epcot.
But I thought maybe that was a special, like, adults-only section of Pleasure Island.
But then again, though, they also did just get told this past week that the Velcro Show is closing in like 3 months, at which point it's like, well, now you get to audition for another job or you're out of work.
Now you get to be sneezy. Yeah. I love the idea that maybe they just have, you know, like they're just one step away from having like a rheostat that a guy holds and then just something implanted like at the base of your spine. And if you're not smiling enough, you just get, you know, you just get the jolt. Sort of like the reverse of the thing that keeps your dog from barking, you know, when he put it around his neck or whatever.
Doesn't it feel like they're running out of ideas, though?
At Disney?
The Velcro Show.
Well, Epcot is sort of – the weird thing about Epcot, to where I have not been, by the way, but from everything I have read and seen about it, it's that it's great largely because it doesn't seem like Disneyland. That it is where, you know, it's basically like Scienceville or something. As opposed to Disneyland, which is, as you know, I went to Disneyland, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago, and I'd been since I was a kid. And you could make the argument that it's designed for kids anyway, and so maybe I was going to be underwhelmed. But I don't think that's the case. I think they try to market it to the entire family, people of all ages, and I really, it felt very trapped in the past.
Well, if you go to Disneyland, I can see how it would be a miserable place to work, because to keep something like that running, it does have to be a fascist state.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all about moving customers and getting them places and making the wait not seem like a wait. And yeah, it's
and
like Mussolini's Italy. Keep the trains running on time.
And also consistency. That you stick to a very strict script. There are very few places in Disneyland proper where you are allowed to like veer from a very strict script of behavior and things that you're allowed to say.
Just to do a callback and to wrap this all up here, we were actually, right before you came in, we were talking about how I own several I'm a freak for Halloween. I love Halloween. And for me, it's like none of the other holidays. I go right from the 4th of July to Halloween to Christmas, and that's it. And then I reset for the next thing again. But I have a lot of Halloween decorations from Martha Stewart, because Martha Stewart's, because I find that especially her Halloween items are fantastic.
Do they have her face on them?
They sort of lights up and...
No, Rick and I were talking about our mutual love and admiration for Martha Stewart, despite her being like a crazy nutso control freak. But that's part of why her stuff is probably so good.
I love
because she's a crazy nutso control freak.
I love the
freak.
Idea of like an actual Martha Stewart sort of, I said taffeta! Whoa!
That would terrify her employees, I'm sure.
Taking away your 401k! But just to do all of these things are sort of part of the same thing, which is the Disneyland is Martha Stewart is Apple Computer, because they all have this single focus on almost like a cult of personality
and
leader.
Oprah owns all of them.
Exactly. And just calls every shot about everything, no matter how small, which is what makes all of those companies really great. And we would say that the reason that people dislike Martha Stewart so much personally, those are the same traits that actually make her such a success and make her product so great, because she is like, she has a vision, and it's like she's not going to let anybody F with that. It's like no one will get in the way, of said vision. We don't have time to talk about the Cheryl said that there was – I was supposed to ask you. I guess maybe do it real quick. Ask you why you're not dressing up, or you're not dressing up for Halloween, or you're not doing a Halloween thing, much to
Halloween.
The dismay of your children.
My children would like me to dress up as a princess or Spider-Man or a duck.
It's a big spectrum they're crossing there.
Right. And I've offered to dress up as Evil Mommy.
A duck?
Yeah. It's my daughter's 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I would love to see you as Spider-Man, by the way. Just saying.
Okay. Well, I have...
Not in a kinky sort of way, but, you know, just...
I was a little taken aback by that. Don and I are going to talk later. Velcro Show.
Okay, then. This is what you're paying your 32 cents a day for, by the way. You kids out there. When you say evil mother, you don't mean like you mean like Coraline evil mommy, like other mother evil mommy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is that just, do you just eschew Halloween in general?
I do it for the kids. The kids enjoy it. I just never, you know, my mom was really big into making very elaborate Halloween costumes as a kid. You know, the time I was a tree and had leaves. Several hundred leaves attached to my body and couldn't actually move. So I think I was just scarred.
That's fantastic. I know maybe it sounds like it was less so for you, but that just sounds adorable. There's just no getting around that. My mom would actually try to make you, it's one of those things you feel like such an ass for when you're an adult, because my mom would make these sort of like Halloween, you know, like homemade costumes. She'd be there with like the Singer sewing machine and like into the night. And then she would, and speaking of Spider-Man, my mom presented me a homemade Spider-Man costume at one point that she'd literally like stayed up you know, way past I gone to bed, and she's in there, you know, just like working her fingers to the bone after holding down two jobs and just whatever. And then she like showed it to me, and I was just such a jerk about it. I mean, it was like five or something, but she presented it to me, and I was like, oh, that's really great. Can I get the plastic one that's like $1.99 at Woolworths? And I was just so ungrateful. I did not appreciate the fact that she had just labored to create this thing. So anyways, I just
Even then, the
jackassery loomed large.
My son is a very – he's a very sweet boy and a very smart boy, but he just – he doesn't like to be the center of attention. And last year at Halloween, my spouse got him a black turtleneck and black pants, and she – printed out this skeleton thing that she was going to sew on the costume, and he just finally announced, can I just go as a ninja and just wear this stuff?
Can I go just sort
maybe
of
a beatnik?
Dressing for invisibility. Awesome. Anna Griffin, you can read her twice a week in print in the Oregonian or online at OregonLive.com. Coming up here in just a few, we got Corpse Watch, also top five songs about Satan. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We're back after this. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Hey, you're listening to the Emerson News Network. This coffee, by the way, here's the thing. It wasn't the first, second, or third packet of sugar. It was the ninth. The ninth packet of sugar really is what It is what allowed my body to believe it was Viso for one bright, shining moment, long enough to drink it.
Mm.
All right, so now I know sugar that in coffee. A pinch, it was nice of you to offer your Viso, though. Don't think I don't appreciate that. I do. It's just, it's good to know that I, you know, when it's crunch time, I'm able to sort of, you know, think I buy with this. And so forth. Still to come, we got Corpse Watch, also top five songs about Satan. That's the top five songs about Satan. I don't know. It seems like I've missed some opportunity. Cleaning solution. Something. Yeah, I don't know. I got nothing. But if you're listening to this program and you're saying to yourself, well, I got the top five songs about Satan. That's fantastic. I have this job watch. I got Anna Griffin, Don Taylor talking about Velcro parties and Spider-Man and the You're a Naughty Girl and, you know, hey, and whatever. By God, that's and all for only 32 cents a day. For the low, low cost of 32 cents a day, how is it possible that this program is available to me, the listener, for a mere 32 cents a day, even less if you're getting an annual subscription? Who is it that's helping to subsidize this program to make sure that it stays at 32 cents?
Oprah?
Exactly. No. It is folks such as Michael Beatty, proprietor of The Cleaning Solution. He's our very first advertiser. Came on board right out of the gate. I think like the first week we were here. Might have even been before we went on. I don't remember. It was like within the first couple of days. The Cleaning Solution, 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. And so he's one of those guys that helps to make, because some days this show is, you know, whatever. We try to make it never less than, you know, an hour and 45 minutes. Sometimes we've done shows that were like 4 hours. But you know what? Whether it's 2 hours, an hour and a half, 4 hours, whatever, the same 32 cents. You don't get charged more when it's longer. That is because, again, our proud business partners have seen to it that that cost will remain fixed for you, the listener. 971-533-3211, Mr. Michael Beatty, proprietor of The Cleaning Solution. And let's be honest, by the time you get to the end of your Halloween party, like half your guests are going to have spewed on the carpet, so you're going to need to call him. So I would be maybe writing that number down now, because I'm not going to be around Sunday night to help you with that. So it's 971-533-3211, whether it's your carpet, your walkway, entryway, tile, anything. 971-533-3211. That is The Cleaning Solution, owned and operated by one Mr. Michael Beatty, The Cleaning Solution.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
All right, then.
So now I'm waiting for you to play that damn Lenny D song. That one song that I want to know what it is so that I don't have to hum it to you and have you mock me.
All right, so you mentioned... we didn't get a chance to talk about this even. Hold on a second. Let me just back up here because see if I got this open. You mentioned this right as we were getting ready to go on the air, and...
It's been stuck in my head for, like, a couple of days, and I don't know what... I know I should know what it is, but okay. I don't know.
So you brought this up. This is the thing that Dawn brought up, like, right as we were getting ready to go on the air, and she goes, you know the music used for the live reads? And let me just pot this down. So you're talking about, like, this is the swinging sounds of Lenny D. And you said, well, it's that one Lenny D song. And I said, well, okay, first of all, the live read beds, you know, they're all Lenny D. Baby, he sets the tone. He is the maestro. He is the soundtrack to all of our many discussions of our many, many business partners, those who engage in commerce with us because it's the right thing to do. And you said, was that one that goes? You could recreate it, I suppose, but it's that one that goes da 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 pa pa pa. And you were being that guy. I was that guy earlier about that other thing. You were that guy just this morning when you're like, you know, it's that one Lenny D song that goes ba 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 ba.
It sounds a little bit like Baby Elephant Walk, a little like Pennsylvania 65,000.
You
it's
do realize
very bouncy
I've got,
and jaunty.
Let me just see here. Let me just see if I can get the actual.
You play it a lot.
I've got 1, 2, 3. I have 48 songs by Lenny D. Not all of them are in rotation at any given time. Let me just see if I can. Let's do a couple here. We'll go through all 48 if I have to. By the way,
okay.
That's you have no doubt about that. Rick Emerson believes a job worth doing is worth doing well. All right. So this is just a random Lenny D song.
This wouldn't be it.
This is not it. All right. Okay.
This isn't it.
You're sure?
Yes, I'm sure.
Previously on the Edge of Wetness.
No.
This probably is not what your 32 cents a day is intended to, but you probably didn't think you'd be paying for this, but you gotta take the bad with the good, kids. All right. We're only on number four. I've got 44 left. All right. By the way, these can all be, these can be found on various recordings such as,
See, this is Little Brown Jug. I know what this
yes,
is.
Yes, it is. Well done. Well spotted.
Thank you.
Now, is the one that you're referring to, is it a cover? Because he had some originals and mostly standards.
This is definitely a cover.
It's... All right. No, that's probably not it either. You can find these on any number of vinyl records. This, however, is coming from his digitally remastered double disc collection called Double D Light. Which can be found at any number of finer record stores. I have all these on vinyl as well, but it didn't really work for our purposes here. Probably not, no?
No.
All right.
No. No. I love this, though.
Isn't this great?
This is great.
Let's see what Madame Ruby sees. This is like right when the Jets and the Sharks are getting ready to mambo in the gym. This is Sweet Georgia Brown.
Yeah.
You probably know this one.
No. This is apparently some Civil War anthem.
Here's the thing. If you're stoned right now, you're welcome. Because this is hilarious if you're stoned.
No. No. No.
Do you feel like you're one of those people going through, like, flip books in the police station?
A little bit, yeah.
Did he look like this? Here's the thing. You listeners, I'm only going to go through the first disc, and we're almost done. If she hasn't found... If it's not on this disc, we're going to... We're going to... You know an astonishing... Are you 90? You can tell me if you are.
I keep telling you. I am 73 years
Jesus.
Old.
Jesus.
You refuse to believe me.
All right, we're... really? Honestly, this says, do we get all 48? What have we done to make you treat us so well, Rick Emerson? All right. All right, we're almost done with this disc. If it's not on this disc, we'll tackle some more of these tomorrow.
Okay.
We'll do like five a day.
All right. Fairly sure it's not this one.
It's not Chinatown, My Chinatown?
No, it's not.
All right, one more. We'll do a little bit of a... We'll do one more here. And then we have to do the rest tomorrow. This one's a little bit of a backhanded Firefly reference for you nerds out there. Classic Lenny D intro.
Anybody see my game?
This is not it.
No.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry about that. We just went through 17 Lenny D songs in a row. You don't get that...
You play it at least once a week. It's definitely in your heavy rotation.
I'm not disputing that. It's one of those things though that I probably phased out just a day or two ago, because I'll pick like what I'll do is I'll pick four or five and then I'll use them for a couple of days and then I get the next like four or five, because again there's like 48 of them and that's just the ones that I have here at the studio. I've got here's the other thing. In addition to Lenny D, there's this other guy I use. What is this? Let's see if I can find it. And then we'll get to the. Then we'll counteract this with some Satan songs, about which, by the way, I am preemptively, like, neurotic, because I'm just so convinced that it's going to be just a huge disaster. So in addition to Lenny D, here's the other thing that I used to use. I haven't used these for the longest time. This is a gentleman named Bob Ralston. Let's see if I can just, hold on a second, I can conjure up some Bob Ralston here. And you old folks like myself will remember Bob Ralston. You can tell this is off the original vinyl. I pulled this off my stereo at home.
Nice.
Bob Ralston, he was the organist for the Lawrence Welk show. And we actually interviewed him because I was using this for so long that I actually just went online and sent him an email. And she's like, I'd love to come on. And so I interviewed Bob Ralston all about what it was like to work on the Lawrence Welk show. It was really one of the best interviews we've had. Yeah, so that's Bob Ralston right there. So, wow, hold on, I can't turn it off. I can't turn off the mellow. This is Hawaiian Wedding Song, by the way, if you're wanting to purchase this on iTunes. You can't. Okay, there we go. Well, I'm sorry. We'll do another 17 of those tomorrow, Don. Does it keep you up?
Well, now I've got so much Lenny D going in my head. Now I can't actually...
It's a blur.
Now I can't recall the actual
Would you know it now if I played it for
well,
you?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Sorry. All right, we have a corpse watch to get to, right?
We do.
All right, well, let's do that. Then we'll do the the top five.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Corpse watch.
All right, here is your corpse watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone. But I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones.
Here is Dawn Taylor with your corpse watch for Thursday.
41-year-old Wendy Edmund Green of Raleigh, North Carolina, has been charged with killing David Reuben Green Jr., her live-in boyfriend. Also charged, or at least believed to have, yes, also charged with the murder, was the man's 15-year-old son and 17-year-old daughter. They believe the teenagers were involved. Their father was found decapitated and stuffed in a freezer.
So this is her and her two kids. So it was sort of a family affair.
No, this is her and his two kids.
Oh, but they weren't kids together. They weren't. It wasn't like children she'd had with him.
No.
Ah.
No.
I see.
These are his children.
How old are the kids?
15 and 17.
What does she look like?
I don't have a picture of it.
Because I'm wondering if that's a whole sort of to die for kind of a, you know, help stepmommy out a little bit. And she'll give you a sweet, sweet dessert.
Oh, God.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, because what else? I mean, unless he was just a dick, which is always possible. But, I mean, it seems like even if he was just a bastard, you know, then the beheading and the stuffing in the freezer just seems pointless then. If he's just a dick, you just give him what he's got coming to him. This seems like it adds sort of almost like a ritualistic sort of a thing going on.
He was reported missing September 1st, but investigators say he may have been killed as early as January.
All right, then.
Court documents show Green was attempting to gain custody of his children. And I'm not sure why his...
So he's trying to gain custody of the kids, but they're not hers.
Oh, I guess they are her. Okay, you're right.
So they're estranged or something?
They say he's her live-in boyfriend, but they do have the same last name.
She's the live-in girlfriend. They live together.
Right.
They have the same... Well, that's interesting. So maybe it's like a common law sort of a thing, or maybe she just... what's the last name?
Green.
Well, it could be a coincidence, yeah. I guess. That's very confusing. I don't understand what's going on.
Well, another story I found here. Yeah, there's a longtime girlfriend and their two teenage children.
Okay.
So I guess, yes.
But the beheading and the putting in the freezer still seems excessive.
It does.
Like, that's a thing you do when a guy's just like a jackass or you're like a member of some Santa Maria cult or something. Now this is a possibility. Maybe the killing and the beheading and the stuffing in the freezer, maybe they were originally thinking they could dispose of the body, you know, piecemeal, and they started to cut the head off, and then thought, well, what are we going to do with the head? I don't know. Well, let's stick in the freezer until we think about it. Like, they got ahead of them. They got ahead of themselves, and then that was really unintentional. And then they just figured they'd stick the thing in the freezer until they kind of figured it all out.
Yeah, I think that's why a lot of people end up in the freezer, is that nobody's really sure what to do with the body yet. So we'll keep it on ice. It won't go bad yet. There's him when
All
he
right.
still had his head. And here's the girlfriend.
Oh, she's unfortunate looking.
No, yeah, she's not an appealing looking woman at
all.
Wow.
I mean, that's just a face like a bad gunny sack.
Yeah.
What is up with that?
I don't know.
I mean, and that's not a thing like she's just, you know, of a certain age. And it doesn't even really look like, I mean, how I wouldn't know whether he was abusive, but then she doesn't have blackened eyes or anything.
Oh, and here's something that wasn't in the other story, too. Investigators believe the body may have been in the freezer since January of 2009, and the wife and children may have fed parts of the body to the family's pet pit bull.
So maybe this was the plan. Maybe they kill the guy, they cut off the head, and they say, all right, now that's what we're going to do. We're going to cut off the head, and then somebody said, well, where are we going to put the head? And somebody said, I don't know, down the disposal. And they go, it won't fit unless you mash it up with a hammer. And then, well, we don't have a hammer. And then they thought, I know, let's give it to Buttercup or whatever. And Buttercup went, yeah.
You know, dog food is expensive and you got...
Dog
got
to eat.
You got meat.
Yeah. Why not?
The woman and the man's children are also believed to have brought friends to their home to see the mutilated remains.
Hey, come on, look at this.
You won't believe what we got in our freezer.
Check it out. It's awesome. Jesus, this is an effed up world we live in.
Yeah.
This is completely, I thought you were going to say for a minute that they went the full Gein and just fed the guy to, like, family and friends.
Maybe that will come out later.
That's like that whole thing with Ed Gein's family, where it's like, you know, they said that if you go to Plainfield, you know where the whole Ed Gein thing happened, some investigators found that there was a wildly disproportionate prevalence of vegetarianism there, which dates back to Ed giving people packages of funny tasting venison for years, which turned out to be less venison and more mom. So there you go. Well, there's your corpse watch, Jesus, for whatever Thursday on the. Does it seem like stories have a particular Halloween bent?
Well,
didn't we just have some story last hour that seemed like it was just designed for Halloween? Maybe not. Maybe some Legion of News. All right. God,
do you want to jump straight into the top five, or do you want to hear about the man who attacked a woman with a corn dog? I can save this till
we should
tomorrow.
Do that for tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Anyway, if you tune in tomorrow, listeners, you hear about a man attacking a woman with a corn dog.
That was your, not a bagel dog, but a corn dog.
No.
That was your, here's the thing. Now I want to go to Orange Julius and get me a pizza dog. Maybe I'll go to Lloyd Center later and live the high life. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Top 5 coming up. Top 5 brought to you by the CJ's High Climbing Solution. I'm sorry, I was distracted by a thing just there. No, it's nothing. Don't worry about it.
Did I do something?
No. It has nothing to do with you. I just...
are you looking at my boobs?
Yes. Yes. You always go to that. You just assume that any time that... Here's what did distract me about your breasts earlier, though. It's not that I was looking at them as such... Because I view you like a sister. Huh. It's that I caught you looking at them.
Yeah.
Just earlier, you were doing this thing of like looking down your shirt like you were worried that the internal alignment was somehow off.
Well, you know, you have to monitor them.
Are they going to go? Are they going to leave?
They could shift.
Are they going to run away with a spoon?
They could shift into some kind of unnatural position. One could just decide to become unmoored.
It was odd. It was like not like you were adjusting your sweater or whatever. Actually, you were just like looking down the front, like Molly Ringwald in The Breakfast Club. It's all very, and that actually distracted me for a second. I was like, "What's going on down there?"
So any woman with particularly if she has reasonably large,
if she's buxom,
she will tell you that depending on what you are wearing for a support garment, they'll actually be different places on your chest. They'll be higher or lower or more squished together depending on what you're wearing to corral them. And so sometimes they're just, I don't know, sometimes they just feel more prominent to me. And I look down and I'm like, those are there. You know?
So this is like the plate tectonics of the boob world where South America used to be over here, part of Pangea. Now it's over here next day.
All right. So I was just kind of,
Well, this breast discussion has been brought to you by CJ's High Climbing Services. That is CJ's High Climbing. CJ'sHighClimbing.com or 503-228-9278. That is 503-228-9278. And actually, Gary, who is one of the guys here at CJ's High Climbing, along with Bo, Lauren, Sean, any of the crew, says that one of their signature services, they do a lot of things that set them apart. But, one of them is invoicing you after the fact, so you don't have to take time off from work to sit around and watch a guy raking leaves, because, how enjoyable could that possibly be? It also is the excellent cleanup. He says that actually almost a signature of their service where, they hear this a lot. That people will have used other services, people to come clean their roof or get the algae or the moss off or clean out the gutters or the downspouts or the drains or just if you look at your lawn and there's just like plant life everywhere that is just gathered up over the summer or not even over the course of the winter or the fall too, because that just sits there and it just half-lifes away and just becomes muck. And people will move it off the roof or out of your gutters and then it just piles up on the lawn and they go, all right, there you go, bye. And they get in the truck and leave and you're like, well, you jackass, you just took it out of the gutter and dropped it on the lawn. And so basically it's like when your mom would want you to eat something and you would just move the plate around. Like you just move the potatoes from this side to that side and you go, I've eaten it, mom, it's gone. And it's like really you've just hidden the potatoes underneath the squash or something. A lot of guys do. They come to your house, they claim you're going to clean out the gutters, and then they just, they clean it out right under your porch and then leave it there. CJ's High Climbing does not do that. You're not going to have to get some other service or some other visit to clean up the stuff from the first visit. So, whether these things are messy or inconvenient or just dangerous or just you don't want to do them, you call CJ's High Climbing. That is CJ's HighClimbing.com or 503-228-9278. 503-228-9278. Here is your top five for Thursday.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
And don't go reading ahead and taking me to task
I'm just checking to make sure I can read your handwriting.
I'm just saying. Well, there's no need to be. There's no need to snap. I'm just saying.
Me? You just attacked me.
I'm just saying.
Just looking at.
I was preemptively just trying to forestall any sort of, like, if you're looking at number two and going, aha! Figurative devil!
No.
I'm just saying.
Wow.
I'm just making the observation. Because I know that it's an area ripe for discussion, so we have to get through it, to put all that at the end,
okay.
Or at the appropriate song number.
All right.
I didn't mean to snap. It's written by hand because then it was a whole thing and I meant to do it this morning and then the whole thing didn't happen.
Okay. You're under a lot of pressure. I understand. You get tired, you know.
All right. I don't even know what's going on now. I feel like we're forming some sort of a therapy group dyad. All right. Anyway, what were we doing? Oh, here we are at
the top five.
Hello, hi. I'm Rick Emerson. These are the top five devil songs, Satan songs. I don't even know what we're calling them now. These are the top five songs about Satan, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Don Taylor, what is honorable mention?
Honorable mention is Ugly Kid Joe. Goddamn devil.
Now, here's the thing about Ugly Kid Joe. I'm not going to argue that they're one of the great American rock bands or anything, or I'm not going to argue that they're a crucial group. But you know what? Underrated. Got a bit of a bad rap. Not a Martha Stewart-sized bad rap. But didn't really get, I think the thing with Ugly Kid Joe, who most people know from their that song Everything About You, and then they had, I think, a minor hit a couple years later with a cover of Cats in the Cradle, which is like a thing that everybody has to cover, I guess, that in MacArthur Park. But it was right at the beginning of the grunge era. It was like when Nirvana and Pearl Jam were ascendant. I think if Ugly Kid Joe had emerged a couple years earlier, they would have had a much longer career, and they would have done much better. I saw these guys, by the way, open for Ozzy Osbourne, I don't know, around the time this album came out. This is America's Least Wanted was the name. They were fantastic.
I spilled a little.
What are you cleaning up with your sleeve over there?
A little bit of Visa.
Okay. All right, here's a chorus featuring Rob Halford, by the way. This is about as straightforward as it gets. I'm telling you right now, if you're like a sort of a misfit 15 and a half year old boy, this is the best thing you've ever heard in your life. And you'll stomp, you can just stomp around the bedroom like with a blanket around your neck. And it's just looking in the mirror and seeing Ronnie James Dio as a reflection. And I gotta give these guys points for being able to get Rob Halford to sing on the chorus of their song. There you go. I strongly endorse picking up this record, by the way. America's Least Wanted.
And he does say, Satan, if you please. So we can indeed say this song is about Satan.
Here's the thing. Sometimes you don't recognize when you're doing the show when you are in the midst of a segment that people will then refer to for years afterward. Sometimes you are, though. Sometimes you are fully aware that you are having some discussion or there's something taking place that, like, 9 years from now, when we're doing the show from space, somebody will be like, what is this going to be? Not one of those lists about Satan? Click, and then hang up. Best show ever. All right. These are the... it was just a thing I said this morning. It made sense at the time, you see. I should take my life. Stupid. These are the top five Satan songs. Don Taylor, what is number five?
Number five is Charlie Daniels' The Devil Went Down to Georgia.
Here's the thing about this song, and I just so desperately wanted to not put this on the list, but then it's like, you can't not, right? I mean, it's like, if I'm gonna play fair, if I'm gonna play by my own rules, are you Googling each song as we do it?
Yes, I want to see if indeed there is a devil song or just a Satan song.
I think a cursory listen to the lyrics would indicate for each song.
See, I believe this one he's merely referred to as the devil.
Okay, but if it's the devil capitalized, that is Satan. It implies that he is the one, the pinnacle, the apex, the king, the toppermost of the poppermost in the demon world.
So you're saying that Satan is indeed Lucifer, is indeed
the devil. No. I'd say Satan is the devil. Lucifer, that's a whole different thing.
Well, see, here's the thing is that you said these were all songs about Satan. If you had said they were all songs about the devil and that Satan is the devil, but when you say Satan,
well, no, but
that's a proper noun, as we would say when we play Scrabble.
Well, no, that's like saying that a song about, that's like saying if I say a song is about Barack Obama or the president, you know, it's the same thing. I don't have to specify that he's the president. If I say top five songs about, you know, about the president, and then I play a song about Barack Obama.
Exactly.
Like, that still counts. If I say I'm playing a song about Barack, if I say I'm playing songs about the president, and I play one about Barack Obama, like, it works both, it's the transitive property, it works both ways.
But if you say you're playing nothing but songs about Barack Obama, and the song just says
the president,
what if the song was written, like, before Barack Obama was the president?
Well, is it about another president, or is it about the presidency in general?
Exactly.
Because that would still be about him.
Not necessarily.
And plus, you got to assume that this isn't a job that they vote people into and out of. You got to figure if you're the devil now, you're probably the devil then.
It's like if you say your top five songs about hot dogs, and then it's a song that references sausage.
No, it's not.
Well,
at all
hot
like
dog
that.
Is a specific
it's,
sausage.
It's nothing like that. In no way is it like that. It bears no relation to that whatsoever. It couldn't be less like that. So here's the thing about this song, is that I really didn't want to put this on, but it's like you can't diminish the cultural value of this song, because this is, you can go anywhere on earth, and even people who loathe Charlie Daniels will know this song. I mean, it's probably playing right now at like half the jukeboxes in Portland. It's weird when you listen to Charlie Daniels, actually, and you realize... Did you ever see him do any of his like religious talk on TV?
No.
Because he's on like the Trinity Broadcasting Network or whatever. He appears on TBN every now and again as one of their guest spokespeople, or one of their, because he's all like a reformed born again Christian guy, and he's like all of them, where he gets to the bottom of the whiskey bottle or he gets to the bottom of the crack vial and he sees Jesus, and so he's become like in the last 20 years just this really terrible racist, unlikable, horrible human being. Where he just he put out that song a couple years ago called this is just me repeating the name of the song title, by the way. So he put out the song a couple years ago called "It's a Flag, Not a Rag, and We Don't Wear It on Our Heads." And that was when I just, like, in the television network of my mind, I just went and just turned it off.
Yeah.
Especially when you consider he's a guy who used to just sing about whores and drugs all the time, which was sort of awesome. And this, you know, he just sang about drugs and Satan, which is sort of awesome. And now he's just kind of become, he's become that.
That's why you always have to appreciate people like Waylon Jennings, who just stay true Waylon Jennings forever.
He's stuck with it. These are the top five songs about Satan. Don Taylor?
Number four is Motley Crue, Shout at the Devil. Now, is this actually a song about the devil?
It is.
It's not metaphorical.
Well, I mean, I guess only Nikki Sixx would know for sure. I mean, it's possible that there was just some guy named Diablo that sold him blow. I mean, it's not like that's out of the question. Because he's a wolf running lonely in the night, you know, he's a... Bloodstain on the stage, you know, he's the spirit of he's the spirit of evil embodied by rock.
Okay.
I don't know.
I never really listened to the lyrics to this, but I always thought "Shout at the Devil" was more of like a metaphor for being rebellious and.
I think it's a shouting like "Take us with you."
Oh.
We'd like to go. Can you buy us beer? It's like as the devil's getting ready to leave, and you're, you know, I have a fake ID. But in the if you're stopping by Glitter Gulch lately, I'd really like to go.
So you believe this is a song about people actually literally shouting at the actual devil?
Yes.
They're not just going, woo, shout at the devil.
Well,
as if
you ask me if the average guy in the crowd at a Motley Crue concert is probably thinking about our cloven-hoofed lord, probably not. He's probably just thinking about beer.
Because I was thinking that, you know, that's actually a really great, you know, turn of phrase for living your life a certain way.
Sort of embracing one's inner darkness.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
And that's what I always assumed that it was.
It is a sort of a, it's a kind of a, it's like a whistling past the graveyard.
Yeah. So we will have to put a question mark next to this one. Then you yourself admit that you don't know that this is actually a song about the literal devil.
No, that's not what I said. That's not what I said at all. I said that I don't know if the average guy in the average Motley Crue crowd is thinking that.
Okay.
I do believe that Nikki Sixx is writing about the actual devil, though. He's writing about the devil, which, in my mind, you know, again, is Satan. And so, and it's sort of like a, it's like, you know what, it's a shouting like a, you're awesome! Sort of a thing.
And to be fair, apparently they did try to do a Jesus is Satan backward message in this, apparently.
No, if you buy if you buy the Shout of the Devil record on vinyl, which I did, on the back it actually just says, I asked Nikki Sixx about this when I interviewed him. This is one of the only this is one of the only questions that I was really like burning to ask him. On the back of the Shout of the Devil record, it actually says, caution, this record may contain backward messages.
Oh.
And I asked him about it. I said, you got to tell me, did Shout of the Devil really contain backward messages? Because that'd be awesome. And this was like last year. And because I thought that maybe, you know, like just as like a gag, they'd put something on. And he's like, no, dude. He's like, it was just some crap we put on the record. And I was sort of disappointed, actually. I was thinking that he just put, you know, like for a good time call, you know, or something. It just, you know, you just put something ridiculous on it, but no. But God, what a great song. God, it's hard to believe this is... Jesus, how old is this? This has got to be... This has got to be 25 years old. All right, these are the top five Satan slash devil songs. Don Taylor, what is it, number three?
Number three is Iron Maiden, Number of the Beast.
Woe to you, O Earth.
That's how you know it's going to be awesome, because it starts with opening narration.
He sends the beast with wrath, because he knows the time is short. Let him who hath understanding reckon the number of the beast, for it is a human number.
What's that number, Don?
Its number
666?
Is 666.
I left alone. My mind was blank.
By the way, as you know, that within the last 7 days, we've done Maiden, I think, twice, and a Slayer song. So this is, we're going to consider that nail just sort of pounded for the next whatever.
A certain slice of the listenership must be very happy right now.
Yes. It's called over-serving the demographic, Don. This song does have a really great build. It is songs like this that make me regret the fact that I've never seen Iron Maiden live. Just have missed them every single time.
One of the great rock band names.
Iron Maiden?
Well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and here's the Iron Maiden does so much right. They've got the great name. They've got the bitchin' logo. And then they have, I mean, they're not like the only band that has a mascot. But they have the best mascot of, like, any band ever. Because he's a half-rotted corpse zombie thing. It's Eddie.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, like, Megadeth, you know, has one. And Anthrax has one. And, you know, whatever. But it's... No, the Eddie mascot is like, that's really what seals it for these guys. And Iron Maiden is just a righteous name.
Well, I'll say you're 3 for 4 so far.
I'm sorry?
You're 3 for 4.
So I couldn't hear you past the wall of metal, Don. You're being drowned out by a sea of awesome. The other thing about Maiden is they have this, I won't say it's unique among metal bands, but more so than most bands you could mention, they have the ability to take something that would just sound so utterly retarded if done by any other band. And it's because they just, A, because they're such exceptional players, and also because they just do it so straight-facedly, you know? Like it's done, like every Maiden song, you get the feeling every Maiden song is done while they're standing, like, on the bow of a Viking ship. And Bruce Dickinson is leaning off, and he's, like, clenching his fist around which, like, a red bandana, you know, a frayed red bandana is wrapped. and he's like holding onto the mast or whatever, and he's leaning off, and then they're, and it's like they're sailing on this pirate ship or this Viking ship off into a horizon, you know, into which a blood red sun is setting. You know, and just, you know, and while being pursued by all the armies of hell or something. And that just allows them to convey even the most ludicrous material is flawlessly.
How about at the end of one of their live shows, they're very tired? Well, some bands, like you watch, like, Bare Naked Ladies, and you don't imagine that they even work up a sweat. These guys, though, like 45 minutes or however long of them playing this music, I'll bet they're very, very tired.
You, by the way, have never, ever, ever sounded more like your Hints from Heloise PR photo for Cinematical or whatever. The now you kids keep it down with the metal. Johnny, did you bring your inhaler? If you're going to rock out to the Dark Lord, you need to have your EpiPen with you.
Well, I wouldn't imagine, like, after a concert, John Mayer really needs to be, like, you know, he doesn't need people like James Brown had.
No.
Like, helping him off stage and wiping his brow with a scarf.
Or, like, for Meatloaf, where they usually have bottled oxygen right off stage for him. Can you imagine if somehow, like, if they were, you know, if somehow they were cars, or if it was like in Monty Python's Meaning of Life, the Crimson Permanent Assurance. Can you imagine if, like, a Maiden concert sailing across the city ran into a John Mayer concert? Can't you just see the Maiden guys coming across the bow like, avast! You know, and just jumping onto the John Mayer show.
And all these floppy-haired little skinny emo boys on the other ship just going, ah!
Wow.
Screeching like little girls.
I almost feel like that should have been number one because it's just freaking awesome.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Oh, wow.
Well.
What a great song. I just want to play. We should have like another channel here where we just play Number of the Beast by Iron Maiden all the time. We should completely.
We could do that.
Seriously. We should do that just as like a gag. Just as like a okay, you people, if you're listening, you're sworn to secrecy. You listeners, you can't repeat this to anybody. Don't give this away. We should just, as a publicity stunt, create like, you know, Howard has like Howard 100, Howard 101, Howard 102. Yeah. We should create like an ENN2, and it's just Number of the Beast by Iron Maiden.
ENN666.
Yes, and that's all it is. It's like a separate channel that just plays Number of the Beast by Iron Maiden 24 hours a day.
Let's do that.
God damn, that would be awesome. I might listen to that on occasion, actually. Like when you get up in the morning, you're just like, oh, I'm tired. Yeah, and then you hear it.
I wonder where I could hear Number of the Beast. Oh, on the Number of the Beast channel.
That's the best idea I've ever had.
That is a great idea.
Okay, I'm totally doing that. All right, fantastic. It doesn't even matter how the top five works out now. It's like we've gotten the one good idea out of it. The rest is just a wash. These are the top five Devil Satan songs. Don Taylor, what is number two? This is taking forever. What is number two?
Number two is Black Sabbath, NIB.
God damn, I love this song.
And you know, of course, where the name came from.
Nativity in Black.
No. It's actually named for Bill Ward's beard.
Really?
Yes, his nickname was Nibby, and his beard was called Ozzy Osbourne when he was stoned once, thought that Bill Ward's beard looked like the nib of a pen.
Oh, see, I had heard that it was about the nib of a pen.
And that they named, the song was actually named Nib at first.
Interesting. That's one of those things that I'd heard the first half in high school, that it was about a pen nib, but I never heard the beard part. And then it doesn't help things that it's called NIB, but it's like, it's dotted.
Right.
It's done like a, what do you call it, an acronym?
Yes.
Also, the Nativity in Black sounds awesome.
Yeah, Geezer Butler said when he wrote the song, he couldn't think of a title for it, so I just called it Nib, after Bill's beard.
Awesome.
And to make it more intriguing, I put punctuation marks in there.
Wait, we're coming up on the best line ever. This opens up the whole Lucifer can of worms, but I'd rather just, we'll address that after the fact. We have to let the line sort of ring out. Oh, I guess we got to go through the bridge first. So this is that, the album version of this. God, how great is that?
This song does count, though, because this is a song about Satan falling in love with someone, so.
See, and that's the thing, is we were always, in high school, Dawn, we were always told by the fat kid named Eddie on the playground that it was a mirror of the birth of Jesus. It was about the birth of Satan, and that's why it was called Nativity in Black, which, you know, whatever. Which kind of seemed fantastic in a scary kind of way when I was like 13, that it was like some inversion of the nativity, you know, scene where there's like three wise men, but they're bringing like hearts. Yeah. I've brought you a baby.
Now I have you with me under my thumb. I love those stronger now with every arm. Look into my
which is so freaking awesome when you're, again, when you're just like some weirdo black-wearing teenager. You're sort of, you're just stomping around your bedroom, which is where you do all your best satanic brooding. And it was like, there was always some friend of yours, you know, that that didn't want to be in the car with you while you were listening to Black Sabbath because it contained spirits. And then there was, but there was always some other friend, mine, her name was Lee, who walked around school with a copy of the Satanic Bible, just because that's what you did back in the 80s. And apparently a copy of that, I would imagine the copy of her copy of the Satanic Bible still resides in that drawer where the teachers put everything that they take away from you. That was not given back to her at the end of class. God, what a huge sound. Follow me now, and it's just like four guys. One of them is just singing. I mean, but just that sound is just massive. And this isn't like a remastered version or a digital. This is like this is basically what it sounded like on vinyl. Awesome. All right, this is all true. All right, what is number one, Don Taylor?
Number one is the Rolling Stones' Sympathy for the Devil.
In retrospect, I think it should have been Iron Maiden just because, you know, Maiden. Oh, you know, because of this song I actually pulled, we won't have a chance to go through today. I got another Keith Richards story. More things coming out about that autobiography of his.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. I've been around for a long, long year. Stole many a man's soul of faith.
It's a song about the devil that has bongos.
I was just going to say, sort of a jaunty kind of a devil. I was just trying to remember what if this is off of Goathead Soup or what album this is off of. Because I think it's the album opener. And if it's not, it should be. But I'm almost positive that it is. And I was just thinking how... That's a top five we should do at some point. The top five album openers. Like, not even really the first song of a career, but like...
Yeah.
Best way to open an album. And see, this is, here's the thing that the Stones do better than almost anyone. There's really nobody in rock that does this as well as the Stones. And it's having a sinister or menacing song without, like, any sort of sinister or menacing instrumentation in the traditional way. As you said, it's like just a piano and, like, bongo drums and a guy going, woo, in the background, you know.
Yeah.
It's just like some hooting monkeys, sort of, you know. But it does have this sort of, like, slinky, undeniable feeling of danger to it. You know what else is like that? Under My Thumb. You listen to Under My Thumb, which basically just sounds like a marimba band. I mean, it just sounds like a guy who's like, it sounds like a guy who's, you know, it's like a guy who's like at the Holiday Inn, like, you know, playing, you know, it's like playing in the background while you're sitting there having, like bad Mai Tais with a friend of yours. He's like playing like a xylophone or something in the background.
Well, this song has that, just that great piano, which is somewhere in this weird meshed up netherworld between like a down and dirty honky-tonk blues piano and actual classical music.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a combination of the two, but neither.
It's that's a guy named Ian Stewart, who was the pianist for most of their great songs. And he really, I mean, he's one of those guys where the Rolling Stones were smart, where they, if they needed like a trumpet player or a French horn or piano, like they used the same group of you know, not even session musicians, but just side musicians for everything. So this guy by this time, Ian Stewart, totally knew what the Stones needed and how it needed to be done. The other thing about this song that makes it so great, like Gimme Shelter, I mean, there's not even really any chorus as such, because it's basically just the same as the verses. It's, but that's what makes it great. It's like Gimme Shelter in that it's just like relentless. And also, there's like a one-note guitar solo here. I mean, that hardly counts as a solo. But it's just relentless. It just builds on this one motif, like, over and over. I'm going to play Under My Thumb tomorrow, just because it's awesome.
By the way, I went back and I looked at the lyrics for Shout at the Devil. And I will have to give you that, yes, the song appears to definitely be about the devil. But I still couldn't figure out from reading the lyrics why exactly he's shouting at him.
Maybe the devil's hard of hearing. Maybe.
Because it's sort of like this whole, he's this guy, he's a howling wolf, he's like the blood in your eye, he between your thighs, he'll make your baby cry. And it's like, okay, you're talking about the devil. And then the chorus is just like, shout at the devil, shout at the devil. It's like, well, why are you shouting
at him? Well, maybe he left something behind, and he's, you know, maybe sort of, you forgot your hat!
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe not. Or maybe it's just like, you know, maybe he's just real vain and he won't put the bell tone in. Hey, is the devil deaf? Yeah, but he's like a real dick about it. He won't turn it up.
He just won't listen.
Or maybe he's displeased you in some way. Devil, I told you not to.
Damn it, devil!
Did you stain the rug again?
Well, maybe.
Devil, get down!
How many times do I have to tell you to?
Sorry.
By the way, I heard somebody reference this song. They were talking about that Keith Richards autobiography that is out now, which I have to buy, by the way. Even though I try to never buy books in hardback because they're, like, more expensive than gold, I feel like I have to just because it seems fantastic. But they were talking about interviewing Keith Richards, and they referenced this song. They're talking about how graceful and sinister the song is at the same time. But they said that they said when you meet Keith Richards, and I've heard other people say things like this. They said when you meet Keith Richards, he's really polite and charming, the way the devil would have to be, which is sort of great. Because you know, here's the thing. This is why that horrible Guns N' Roses remake of this was awful. You know, if a band today did a song like this, it would just be like loud and just a huge guitar up front, and it would be mixed to where it was like one big wash of terrible, distorted, you know, overdriven noise. Which I don't mean like records can be loud now, but they wouldn't have. The song becomes so much more sinister because they don't try too hard. They just like lay back. It's like an effortless. It is the effortless danger that comes with being the real deal, as opposed to being Limp Bizkit or whatever. You know, trying to sound, you know, like you're a badass.
I read an interview with Patty Hansen a month or two back in Vanity Fair, and because she's beaten breast cancer and she's doing a bunch of her own stuff. And they talked about how Keith had this memoir that was set to be coming out, and if she had read it, or if she hadn't yet, if she was going to. And she just had the best take on it. It was like, no, she wasn't. She said, basically, they've been together for 25 years or whatever. It's like, at this point, if there are things that he did in his past that she doesn't know about, there's really nothing to be gained by finding out about
Seriously.
It now.
Seriously. I mean, yeah. What possible benefit would there be? Yeah, I have an article that I pulled that we'll maybe get through tomorrow. It's about, because he gave an advance copy to Mick Jagger, too. And he's like, well, let me know if there's anything you think is wrong or whatever.
This whole thing about me being enraged by you and saying you have a really small penis. I hope none of that really bothers you.
Do you know the only thing that Jagger asked him to take out?
The penis thing?
No, he did. See, that's the weird thing, is that, like, in the book, he was like, and he's got a tiny wang. And Mick, I guess, was just like, whatever. And do you know the only thing Jagger asked him to take out?
Mm.
You'll find out tomorrow on the Rick Emerson radio program. Two things. We didn't forward promote this much, but I'll tell you. So coming up here in just a moment, we're doing an episode of AZ every day this week, the ongoing zombie-based radio drama that originally aired a couple years ago. We're doing one episode per day. And then Halloween will actually be playing the entire thing, the whole series back-to-back, along with an interview with Jason Crump and Aaron Duran. So we got episode 4 coming up today, which I believe is The Geek Shall Inherit. That I could be wrong about that. So that's coming up today.
And tomorrow we will be announcing the winners of the Geek-O-Lantern
Yes,
contest.
That's the other thing is that we got to do, and we didn't get a chance to talk to Anna Griffin about that. So I don't even know how we're going to figure it out. It just seems impossible. Just makes me tired even thinking about it. But you know what? Whatever. We'll play through the pain for the people.
I see an evening with a lot of emails in our future.
Oh, God. It's one of those things where, in retrospect, we should have just had the audience themselves vote on it, because then we could have avoided blame and guilt and whatever. So that's tomorrow. We'll announce the winners of the Geek-O-Lantern contest. Also, tomorrow, which is Friday, and there's more about this at rickemerson.com, and it's on the Baghdad website and whatever. Tomorrow, the Blood and Guts Bash happening at the Baghdad Theater from 9 to midnight, from Things from Another World. That is a special screening of The Vampire Diaries, followed by Helsing and Gantz, which are two animated manga works that have been animated. So some fine Japanese animation, which is like unbelievably violent and fantastic for that. So that is happening tomorrow at the Baghdad Theater. It's free, but you got to be 21 and over. And there's going to be a ton of they got a huge pile of Buffy stuff they're going to be giving away. First of all, they got a bunch of Gantz and Helsing themed gifts, as well as Buffy, and then some Nikita things as well, because that's a thing that the young kids, the people are into now.
We will both be there, you and I.
That's right, Dawn. We will. Holding it down socially is only Dawn, Taylor, and I can. So that is tomorrow night, Friday night, the 29th, 9 to midnight at the Baghdad, the Blood and Guts Bash. Again, no cover, no cost. You got to be 21 and over. In just a few minutes, we're going to have episode 4 of AZ, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. Betwixt the two, there'll be an encore of Legion of News. Just because now it seems like the best idea ever, we're just going to end this program by playing Iron Maiden again. And then you'll have episode 4 of AZ. So that is on the way. We want to thank our guests, including the Oregonian's Anna Griffin. She can be read in print in the Oregonian or online at OregonLive.com. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district here in beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Dawn Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from you. It is Thursday, October 28th, 2010, and that is the frequency, Kenneth. See y'all again tomorrow at noon for Legion of News and shortly after 1 for this very fine radio program. Thank you for listening. Be safe. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Woe to you, O earth and sea, for the devil sends the beast with wrath, because he knows the time is short. Let him who hath understanding reckon the number of the beast, for it is a human number. Its number is 666.
I left alone. My mind was blank. I needed time to think, to get the memories from my mind. What did I see? Could I believe that what I saw that night was real and not just fantasy? Just what I saw were the reflections of my woman staring back at me. Cause in my dreams, it's always there. The evil face that twists my mind and brings me to despair.